Meeting, I call the meeting of the Lebanon Township Board of Adjustment, January 10, 2024, to order. This is the reorganization and regular meeting of the board. I start off by please asking everyone to rise for the flag salute in the back of the room.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Ask the acting secretary to do a roll call, please.
Mr. Walls?
Here.
Mr. Sachs?
Here.
Mr. Porcino?
Here.
Mr. Van Dorn?
Here.
Mr. Statton?
Here.
I'm sorry. Mr. Rich?
He's here.
Mr. Eberly?
Here.
Mr. Iannisi?
Here.
Ms. Zatika?
Here. Okay. In compliance with the Open Public Meetings Act, notice is hereby given that the Lebanon Township Board of Adjustment will hold their reorganization, business, and regular meeting on January 10, 2024 at 7 p.m. at a different location. The meeting is being held at the Voorhees High School, located at 256 Route 513 in Glen Gardner, New Jersey. The meeting is being held in a new cafeteria on the first floor. Notice of this meeting was published in the Hunterdon Review and Hunterdon Democrat on December 13, 2023. Copies of the agenda were emailed to the Hunterdon Review, the Hunterdon County Democrat, the Express Times, and the Star Ledger, and faxed to the Courier News, posted on the Township Bulletin Board, and a courtesy copy posted on the Lebanon Township website on January 3, 2024. As to the reorganizational aspect of the meeting, I just wanted to announce that I swore in the following members before the meeting. So we now have a full complement of board members all sworn in. I swore in Tom Sachs as a Class 4 four-year term member. I swore in Derek Porcino as a Class 4 four-year term member. I also swore in Derek Van Dorn as alternate number 2, which is a two-year term. And I swore in our newest board member, Matt Walls, Class 4 four-year unexpired term. I'm now going to ask for nominations for chairman. Anyone have a nomination for chairman? Shout it out if you have one.
I nominate Wayne Eberly for chairman.
Are there any other nominations for chairman? Seeing none, I'm going to ask whoever made the nomination to make a motion to appoint Mr. Eberly as chair.
I make a motion to appoint Wayne Eberly as chairman.
Second, anyone?
I'll second that.
And I'll ask for a roll call vote, please. Tell you what, voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstain? Okay, I turn the meeting over. Chair,
yeah. Okay, at this time, can we get a nomination for a vice chair?
I'll nominate Karen Zatika for vice chair.
Are there any other nominations for vice chair? There are none. Can we get a motion for a nomination for vice chair, Karen?
Josh,
read the
motion.
Josh, is there a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Nomination for voucher review. Any nomination for
that? A thankless job, but an important one nonetheless.
I nominate Tom Sachs.
Are there any other nominations for voucher review?
I'll make a motion for Tom Sachs for voucher review.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, there are nominations for assistant voucher review.
I nominate Derek Porcino.
Are there any other nominations for assistant voucher review? You get a motion.
I make a motion for Derek Porcino for assistant voucher review.
Second.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Yes. Before we begin our meeting tonight, I would just like to mention that Gail, maybe some of you know, maybe some of you don't know that, Gail Glashoff, our board secretary, township employee of 37 years, unexpectedly passed away on December 27th. Gail not only loved her job, she was exceptional at it. It's hard to picture a meeting without Gail giving the go-ahead to start and her ability to interject her extensive knowledge of municipal land use law. She certainly will be missed tremendously by the Board of Adjustment, but her passing is a loss to the township that is immeasurable. Please keep Gail's family in your thoughts and prayers as they navigate through this very difficult time in their life. Thank you, and she will be missed. So we are, next on the agenda is the appointment for the professionals. We're going to talk with them one at a time, and then we can do a bulk motion to approve unless someone has an objection or comment. So the appointments for board attorney is Jonathan Drill, Jessica Caldo, professional planner, board planner, Bryce Good, professional engineer, the board engineer, Kim Jehovitz is the acting board secretary at this time. The board stenographer is Lucille Gronsky stenographer, and Mark Black is the alternate attorney. Does anyone have any comments or questions on any of the appointments? If not, can we have a motion to approve the appointments for the professionals?
I make a motion to approve the appointments for the professionals.
Is there a second? A second.
I'm sorry, who's second?
Michael. Oh, man. Sorry about that.
Do not move. Sorry.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The next item on the agenda is about the resolutions and the authorizing the agreement for professional services. Do we get a motion to approve the agreement for authorizing agreement for professional services?
I make that motion.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Next one is the annual notice schedule for 2024. Is there any comments on that, or can we get a motion to approve the annual notice schedule?
I'll make that motion.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the next item is the Wagner resolution.
On the Wagner resolution, the following board members were eligible to vote on this: Devine, Everly, Heinley, Christina, Sass, Staten, Zatika. And this is the second draft was dated January 4th, and then I sent out some red line typos and suggested edits as a red line document this afternoon. So this is now dated January 10, version 3. And since I sent out the red lines, it doesn't need to be changed. You do not have to read it to the record if everyone's read it. This is one of those individuals that I mentioned should make a motion to adopt. So let's
say. I make a motion to adopt the Wagner resolution.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Who's the second?
Mike.
Yeah. You want me to do the roll call? Or you have, the roll call is, okay, Devine.
He's no longer.
Not here, sorry. Oh, well, he's no longer a board member. I have to listen. Everly.
Yes.
Ines.
Yes.
Corsina.
Yes.
Sachs. Yes. Staten.
Yes.
And Zatika.
Yes.
Okay, and I will, tomorrow, Jim, I'll have this done.
Next item on the agenda is adopted special contracts. They are for Jonathan Drill as our board attorney, Jessica Caldwell, professional planner, board planner, Gary Caldwell Associates, LLC, Bryce Good, professional engineer, Fidelity Consulting Engineer, the board engineer, and Mark Brown, Esquire, for the alternate attorney. Did everyone have a chance to take a look at the contract? Are there any comments or changes?
No comments, no changes.
We can do one bulk motion for all professional contracts. Do you have a motion?
I'll make that motion.
Is there a second?
I'll second that motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. This is, next item is to appoint the application completeness review committee. The review committee has three board members. we volunteered for that. I would be willing to volunteer for that.
I would be willing.
Myself, Mr. Pugh, Mr. Sachs. In the past, we've done
alternate
office. We just went down the line. It's called.
Okay.
Sorry, Derek. Senior member, even that.
Okay, so the motion.
Yep, motion. So we have a motion point three mentioned. And
I make that motion.
Second.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the next item up is the presentation of minutes. Do you eligible people to make a motion to approve the minutes or accept the funds? Is the Tita, Mr. Rosino, Mr. Sachs, Mr. Bush, correct?
Correct.
And again, just for the record, Mr. Rich is sitting as a bar planning board member only for the NAR group application. He has not been voting on anything else on the organization, but the minutes, he's an eligible member to vote on the minutes.
Any questions?
None.
Is there a motion to approve the minutes for December
12th? Mr. Rich, make a motion.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second.
Do a roll call on this, we make 45 eligible members. Actually, we're going to have four eligible members.
Four, right? So, Mr. Pugh?
Yes.
Mr. Rosino?
Yes.
Mr. Sachs?
Yes.
Mr. Rich?
Yes. Again, Ms. Devine, Ms. Devine has resigned from the board.
The next one is items for discussion, the final budget 2024.
That will be coming over the next month.
Okay, so we're going to table that right now.
That's correct.
Okay. So at this time, myself.
Presentation of bills?
Oh, sorry. Are there any bills?
There are no bills present.
Okay. So at this time, myself and several board members who are in another group for the application to be heard tonight, I'll go to your peers.
Okay, so for the record, you just announced your name on the queue first.
Wayne Everly, the Hughes.
Michael I. Dacey, the Hughes.
Derek Van Doren, recuse.
Brandon Staten, recuse.
Okay, thank you for the public hearings. The three applications listed below have been consolidated for purposes of holding one hearing on all applications simultaneously. Interpretation application, NORA Group, Block 57, Lot 23, 62 Yankee Road, RC Zone, 7.5 acres. Remedy salt in the application, interpretation of capital ordinance, section 400-4, definition specifically the term farm and agriculture and horticulture, to determine whether the applicant's proposed medical cannabis growing facility is included with the meanings of those terms. While the applicant is aware of the adoption of ordinance 2022-10, which prohibits cannabis growing facilities of all types, the applicant seeks the above interpretation of ordinance section 400-4, independent of that prohibition on the proposed use. Number two, use variance application. NAR Group, Block 57, Lot 23, 62 Anthony Road, RC Zone, 7.5 acres. Relief sought in the application, G1 use variance, from ordinance section 400-9A, which prohibits cannabis growing facilities of all types, to allow the proposed facility, which will be engaged in the cultivation of medicinal cannabis and the RC zone. D1 use variance from ordinance section 400-8A1, if deemed necessary to permit agricultural labor housing within one of the existing structures, and D1 use variance from ordinance section 400-8B5, if deemed necessary to permit sequence of structure on one lot to allow for both the facility to, as well as an agricultural labor housing within an existing structure. Time within which to decide application, April 15, 2024. Number three, site plan application, Nora Group, Lot 57, Lot 23, 62 Anthony Road, RC Zone, 7.5 acres. Relief sought in the application is a preliminary and final site plan application to allow construction of the proposed improvements on the property. Time within which to decide application, April 15, 2024. First, I want to say Happy New Year to everybody, and I appreciate you coming today. I'm thankful for everybody who has done it in the past and continue to make this a fair and impartial hearing. I kindly request that you continue to avoid disruptions and repetitive questions so we can, as a board, uphold our responsibility to evaluate and make determination on our group's interpretation, usage, and site plan applications, including the possibility of a secondary use variance. Therefore, we strongly encourage you to pose questions to the witnesses, but it is essential to do so respectfully and civilly. This approach ensures that every voice is heard and contributes to a productive and considerate discussion. Also, please turn off all cell phones. The board will continue with Ms. Jennings' expert witness today, where we will resume with the board's professionals questioning of him, followed by the board. We will then continue with Ms. Jennings' next witness, followed by questions from the objectors, the public, board professionals, and finally the board. When you do come up to the podium, please remember to state your name, spell in your last name, and either give your address or whether or not you're a resident. To enable all questions to be answered, please keep your time appropriate to be considerate to everyone. No comments, just questions. Then the applicant's attorney will have the next witness testify, followed by the same format. Lastly, please be aware that following the conclusion of public comments, the applicant will have the opportunity to offer rebuttal testimony with or without exhibits. This rebuttal will be open to cross-examination. Once more, I express my gratitude for your cooperation and commitment to ensuring the productivity and fairness of this hearing of everyone involved. Thank you. Yes.
A couple of housekeeping items. So first, as you heard in the reorganization meeting, the board now has a new member, Matt Walls. As I said before, he's a Class 4 member, and he's finishing the 4-year unexpired term. I didn't say of who, and that's Ms. Devine, who has resigned from the board. And I supplied all the transcripts to him. He will be signing a certification that he's read them all, so he will be eligible. But suppose he's obviously eligible to participate. He's understandably brand new to this. You might be doing more listening than asking, but I think that over time, they'll be right up to speed. Item two, again, to remind everyone, because we only have 4 board members that are eligible because of the recusals, we have Mr. Rich, who has kindly agreed to be barred from the planning board, sitting on this application under the borrowing statute. Lastly, at the end of the last hearing, we announced that their security expert, David Kushner, was not going to be able to attend tonight because he had to be out of state and we were going to go out of order. Well, it turns out he was able to change his plans. So he is going to continue and hopefully complete, because the only thing left, I think we left off with board expert questions. And after the board expert are done, it's then board of adjustment questions, and then he's done unless Ms. Jennings has any redirect. What I want to do, I want to take care of one other housekeeping item related to security. And that is, we had this discussion at the last hearing session about Exhibit A93. And we had, back on December 20th, 2 versions of A93. We had a full, unredacted version, and I am the only person to date on behalf of the board who have read that. I did not distribute it to board members, and did not distribute it to any board experts. Ms. Jennings had submitted a heavily redacted version of A93 to be submitted into evidence, and I had announced last time I wanted to consult with the township attorney, Mark Roselli, and I wanted to get him the unredacted version, and with Ms. Jennings' consent, I did that. And so what Mr. Roselli returned to me today was A93 with the redactions that he would advise the custodian of records for the township to make if the unredacted version was submitted. So, with the consent of Ms. Jennings, what I am going to do is I've asked them to produce the version of A93 redacted by Mr. Roselli, which still has a lot of redactions in it, as you'll see, but not as many as before. That's the version that's going to be entered into the public record. I'm going to physically hand out the unredacted version to the board members. I'm going to ask them to read it. So maybe we'll take a break after the experts cross-examine this witness. Take a break, let the board members read it, and see if they have any cross-examination questions based on his testimony, and then cross-examination questions based on the security plan. But I'm telling everyone, you have to be very, very careful that you don't reveal anything that would have been redacted. So I'm going to ask that if any board members have any questions for the security expert based on the unredacted security plan, that you literally whisper the questions in my ear first, so I can have, I can give you advice on whether or not you should be asking it. So with that, can you please hand out a copy of A93 as redacted by Mr. Roselli? And I'll ask the objector's attorney if he has any objection to this, but I'll be quite honest with you, even if you do, I'm going to advise the board to do this, but I want to at least give your position on it.
Oh, I have no objection right now because I haven't seen it. But and with all due respect to Mr. Roselli, I guess it would be useful to understand what the basis was for the redaction.
Security.
Well, I understand that, but what standards apply, for example.
Listen, the standards that apply, you're going to have, this is between anyone who wants to ask and Mr. Roselli. As I said last time, this is above.
Well, you're asking me if I have objections, so I don't know if I have objections.
This is above my stripes. This is the township attorney is the person that gives advice on any township, any documents that are in the township family, including an independent agency like the Board of Adjustment. So if the unredacted version was submitted into evidence, okay, and went into the board's file, which I don't want it to get into the board's file because what I'm nervous about is if it gets inadvertently disclosed. So the way I figured to go about this, this was my idea of it, is have Mr. Roselli do the redactions that he would have suggested ahead of time. Now, once you see it redacted, if you disagree with him, you can either file an action in the Superior Court to object to the redactions, or you can go to the Government Records Council and file objections.
So you just asked me about it,
yeah. Yeah, so that's, I wanted to hear your position on it, so that's, if you have any specific objections to it, it's, in my opinion, it's not for me, it's not for the board. It's to pick up with Mr. Roselli first, and then if you don't like what he says, then you go to the appropriate forum, which is either the Superior Court or the Government Records Council.
Well, for purposes of tonight, this is what you just handed me is what's been, the redactions have been modified?
Yes. This is less redactions than before.
Okay, well, it's almost entirely redacted. So I guess I would just object for the record to this, and because I don't know what basis would be to redact things.
Yep.
Things are obvious to anybody walking by, and they're redacted. I don't know why we're redacting that, for example. So I don't know.
Totally understood.
Okay.
And I just wanted you to get your objection into the record. But again, my advice is that the board shouldn't do anything about this. This should be between whoever has a problem with this and Mr. Roselli.
Well, also, just so it's clear from my objective, this doesn't preclude us from arguing at the end of the case about this redaction and what may or may not be in here.
Okay, you're not going to be precluded from doing anything other than you're going to be precluded from seeing the unredacted security plan.
Right. But the fact that we didn't see the unredacted security plan is redacted in the argument.
Correct.
Thank
you. Yep. You're absolutely correct. You're not waiving any argument.
Right.
You're at all.
Right,
so all your arguments and objections are preserved for record.
Thank you.
Just so the record's clear then, the A93 Are we going to identify it with today's date? Because when we were here the last time, the other A93, this is a replacement.
Correct. This is the A93 going in to evidence is...
Let's use today's date.
Today's date, which is 1-10-2024, and I've actually written on the top of mine in parentheses after the A93, redacted by M.M. Hall, to make it clear who did the redactions on it. So, in my opinion, the board should rule that A93, as redacted by MMR, handed out tonight, January 10, 2024, was the document that is going to evidence. Is that your ruling?
It is.
Okay. And again, after the expert cross examined this witness, then I will hand out the unredacted and ask you to give a brief recess so you guys can read. And with that, where were we?
Ladies first.
You said last time.
Always. Ladies first. That's
just a couple questions that the planner pointed out last time. Are there any...
Okay, hold on. Can you identify yourself in red?
Sorry.
David Kushner, K-U-S-H-N-I-R.
And you remain under oath, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thanks. Are there any state regulations regarding armed security for cannabis facilities?
So there are no regulations that it's required. There are regulations that the state has for who can and cannot carry a firearm. So it would be licensed.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. And then are there any concerns about having a residence on the property in addition to the cannabis facility?
So the residence for the a residence on a property will be utilized for people that work there. So if we have 24/7 monitoring on the site itself, we're not going to put cameras inside of the house where people are sleeping or eating. But if there is an issue that goes on, that would spell outside, you're going to see it on cameras, and you know, we would take whatever action is appropriate.
Okay. And just for any visitors that might be
so
visiting it, residents. Just any concerns about the visitors that might be visiting the residents there.
So it's you're not to enter the property unless we know that you're coming. So that's, you know, they're not going to be allowed to have people come and visiting and hanging out in the house.
Thanks. That was all the questions I had.
Okay. Good evening, Mr. Kushner.
Yes, sir.
Last time we met, you had mentioned that the facility will be secured by a locked padlock. This is in contrary to the site plan that calls for a telephone entry system. Has this been changed so that you're only using a padlock?
If I can explain, that you can use an electronic locking device, a padlock. That's separate from the telephone entry system. Telephone entry system means that when someone shows up at the gate, they're going to have to call to have someone either come unlock the padlock, or if we went with an electronic gate, that you would need to press a button to allow the person in. So it's sort of two separate things.
Okay, so just for confirmation, there will be a telephone entry system?
There will be a way of communicating from the front gate to insider security to allow access.
Okay. Right. What is shown on the site plan? There is a gate, which I was getting ready to ask about the gate.
Okay.
And it calls for a telephone entry system with a concrete raised curb, basically push button system, et cetera, et cetera.
Are you proposing anything that deviates from what's on the site plan?
No.
You've got to keep on going.
Yeah. So my second question related to the gate, the site plan shows a slide gate versus the evidence that was provided by yourself and Mr. Manglani, that there is currently a swing-style gate on the site, farmed gate, et cetera. Just wanted confirmation, is there a difference, is the site plan incorrect and need to be modified, or will there be a slide gate installed?
So if it's on the site plan, we'll make sure the slide gate gets installed.
Thank you. One last question, and maybe
this is in your purview, maybe not. There is a sound wall proposed around the building. Are there any safety measures for anyone potentially falling off of that wall as part of the site security safety system in place?
So there won't be nets on it, but I think we were asking if there's going to be cameras, you know, motion detectors, there'll be lighting. I don't know that if a wall's put up that, you know, I've ever seen some sort of safety device to prevent people, if there's a wall, you shouldn't be climbing it.
So let me start with. It appears based upon the grading plan on the site plan that the backside of the wall will be accessible, that it's not a vertical wall on both sides. So there will be grade on one side. So if an employee is stretching their legs or on a smoke break or something, having you walking on the backside of that wall, what prevents them from accidentally falling off of that wall?
If there's no fence, I would say that there would be nothing if the wall isn't extended to a proper height. But that wouldn't be my area of expertise.
Thank you. That's all the questions I have.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so at this point, I want to hand out. I suggest I do it first. I'm going to say the unredacted security plan is 3 pages single spaced. I'm going to say realistically a 15 minute recess so all you guys can read this.
Okay, we'll do a 15 minute recess and come back at 7:50.
I'm going to ask the board to hand me back the unredacted. Yep. And I can say that there's going to be no questions asked about things from the unredacted security plan. All the questions relate to direct testimony that the witness will give.
Okay. I just had a couple questions. Right, so, when no employees are there, and that was what Mr. Maglani's, according to his testimony, I believe he said there'd be two shifts. Will there still be somebody hired or somebody there or hired at a different location to watch the do remote monitoring?
Yeah, so the plan is that you're going to have 24/7 monitoring. Mm-hmm. If someone, you know, we would love to have someone on site 24/7. No matter what, monitoring or not location. That's always the best. If there's a situation where you couldn't get there, you know, then we would have it monitored from a remote location. And that's why you have cameras that you connect to the internet. You can also have cellular backup. So there's a whole host of ways that you're able to maintain monitoring the facility.
But just I wanted to make it clear. But the applicant is offering, if the board gets to the point that they were going to approve the application, the applicant is offering to have 24-hour in-person monitoring on site?
Yes.
Would that be just monitoring, or would that be also include, you know, controlling, and so that there wouldn't be somebody 24 hours watching it?
So, you know, so I understand. And basically what you try to do is, you try to set up a camera system that you can do what's called virtual tours, which means that you can see every portion of the property, the business that you're looking to cover, and in conjunction with motion detection sensors or alarms, it allows you, you know, to have sort of a force multiplier. Those days of someone walking around a perimeter building with a flashlight, you know, they're kind of not in the security world.
Right. Okay, so, and I think somebody mentioned this, our internet here is definitely not reliable. I see that you mentioned about a cell. What happens if it does go down for hours and sometimes it's even days? And I know you mentioned fiber optic. To my recollection, that isn't available in this area, maybe even something different. So what would your plan be?
So the plan would be you're going to have cellular backup.
Mm-hmm.
that as long as the cell towers are up and running,
yes.
And usually the cell towers have a generator.
Make a response to that.
I don't know what you're making your response to because I didn't get what he said because people were talking. So
sure, I'm sorry. Can you repeat that?
So the cell towers generally have generators that also operate to keep them electrified and operating during power outages.
Okay. In reference to that, I can tell you from experience, for the civilian question, I often have zero cell service, and I mean on a daily basis. What happened at that point?
Right.
Neither one works.
So ask him, if you have no cell service, then
and no internet.
Right, no internet, no cell service, what's the plan?
The plan is you have a person on site, he would call, we would try to get other people on site, and then you revert back to, right, Fred Flintstone police, you walk around with flashlights on the property.
The person would call on, a hard line number?
Whether it be a hard line, internet, their
and
cell.
Again, the question, the hypothetical is, internet's down, no cell service. What happens? You said the person would call. My question is, call on what? A hard line phone, or satellite phone, or different plan?
So, at that point, if the person, could they drive to a location if there was no hard line phone available? But that's a good idea to add, make sure that we have a hard line phone. But
she's asking you.
Yeah, so
I'm not giving you any ideas. She's asking if the internet goes down, there's no cell service, what's the plan?
The plan is for that person to do foot patrols.
I'll move on. I believe your current license allows for the growing of cannabis indoors and outdoors. Is that correct?
I wouldn't have the answer to exactly.
Rephrase it this way. Are both indoor and outdoor cannabis included in your security plan?
So the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. And the plan is to have 100% indoor grow, is what the plan is. And if that changes, where we would not be able to form inside, then we would reevaluate and develop a different security plan that would cover outdoor grow.
And so the answer is the security plan is for indoor grow only.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. With just the indoor growing of cannabis, you testified that there would be 50 cameras inside instead of 2,000 square feet, 16 outside, and 5 to 6 additional in the driveway and roadway. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Is it conceivable that with this much security, that the facility by definition includes the manufacturing of plants that necessitates a more controlled environment as far as being categorized?
No, so state regulation doesn't require that we do any of that. What we're doing is we're looking to make it a safe and secure facility, but not only for the company, but also for the community. The goal is to be able to prevent things. Deterrence is the first step. As I always say, crime isn't committed where the police officer is standing on the corner. Generally, it happens somewhere else. So if people see cameras, they tend not to do things.
But you said the state doesn't require any security, but they do require the 24-hour monitoring. Isn't that part of security?
So the state requires that you have a security plan in place that's approved. What that plan is, they don't set guidelines that you have to have a fixed number of cameras, that you have to do specific things. So what I do is I look for best practices, and that's how I came up with the security plan.
Okay, so there's no guidelines from the state. Thank you. You may have answered this. Is this your first full security plan that you've written for a cannabis grow facility?
So for a cannabis grow facility?
Yes. And I just wanted to confirm, and this was mentioned to you some time back, that you do have a financial interest in this company.
So I was provided with shares of stock.
So, yes. Do you believe this is a conflict?
No, And I view it, if I have my house, I'm going to keep my house safe.
Okay, and according to your testimony, and this may be something a little bit different, but you testified that Mr. May Landon, quote, had his wife get a license. Can you just explain what that meant?
What it meant was Rochner was a person whose name was on the license. Maybe I was a little inartful in the word I used, but that was, Rochner was a person whose name was on the license. So it wasn't that he made her, you know, no mail show minutes intended, you know.
You testified you would be responding from Greenbrook. Does that mean that the calls don't go directly to the township police or the state police when they're on?
So what happens is if you have a call for service, the person will call the police first, you call 911 first. They would call me, probably call Nathan, Rochner, let him know something happened, and I would respond as well.
Okay, thank you. No further questions.
The alarm service that's provided at the facility, that's the central area. Can you turn on that corner? The alarm service that you have at the facility, is that a central station alarm system?
Yes, it's a little bit.
So that goes to a third party?
So it would go to a third party, or it could be tied in directly to law enforcement.
So what would be the protocol for this facility?
So the protocol would be the central station first.
I believe you gave testimony that you intend to have one security person.
So we're going to have a minimum of one person on site 24/7.
Okay.
Depending on what time of day, what's going on that day, you could always contract out, and that's what I said, that we would look to hire internally, but we could also use supplemental with a subcontracted, whether it be a guard agency, or you would get a private detective guard agency that has a guard license, and we would get RPO, which are retired police officers, that permitted if we were with, you know, if we ever found any, to have armed security.
And the gate to the facility is a manual gate?
So, currently it's a manual gate. When the engineer just asked the question that the site plan said it was going to be a slide gate, while they can be manual, the plan would be to have it as an electric gate. And the call box will come, there's going to be cameras in the loop there. We're going to know whether someone is supposed to be coming. So the first step is the call box. Hey, I'm looking for so-and-so. They're not here, you're at the wrong location. Turn them away. If it's someone, okay, we're here to make, you know, pick up, then what would happen is we would say, okay, what's your name? We'd look at the license plate. Does it match the information that the service provided us? You know, and we would say, okay, and we would grant entry. That would grant an entry to the property. There would be a secondary screening when they came to the door as well.
Does the state have the same requirements for hemp production as they do for cannabis?
No, for hemp production, there's no requirements.
That's the difference. So the only reason we put together the program is to do cannabis production.
Yes, that's correct. I'm sorry.
And let's put that you're going to have a background check done. Are there written standards for that background check?
So generally background checks, if you're going to work in the cannabis industry, you need to be a state license. So the background check is conducted by the state of New Jersey, not us.
For the employee?
Yes, for any employee.
You're going to have standards for that background?
It's going to be a state background investigation according to the cannabis regulatory.
So everybody has to meet that same standard?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Security advisors, is there a group of individuals that are used as advisors?
So when we say advisors, I'm going to go, when it comes time to select the camera system, I'm going to speak to several vendors. So I'm getting advice from them. They're the ones that know the technical specs of the cameras they're using. I sort of go in and I look at it, I look at the area and say, okay, here is what I want to see. Do you give me, you know, your plan on how it's going to work, giving the specs on the camera, resolution. I know for general viewing, the resolution doesn't have to be as high. You know, there are different cameras that focus from, you know, if you want to cover a broad area, you go high in a corner and shoot out. If you want to, you know, have a camera over the top watching it, you know, someone when they're trimming a plant isn't putting it in a pocket, you're going to have a higher resolution safe camera over that station that they're working at. Same thing as in a retail industry. You know, there are cameras that cover a floor, but then there are cameras that are directly over the cash register as well. So hopefully that explains it a little bit better.
The cameras that you're using have night vision capabilities?
So, yes, if you're going to put cameras outside, they have night vision, and most cameras now have night vision capability. They have all light cameras.
I have a couple, yeah. You had sent a security plan to the CRC, the original security plan. Has the new plan, the modified plan, been sent to the CRC?
In other words, has A93 been sent, the one that they read tonight, has been sent to the CRC?
No, it has not yet.
Do you plan on it?
Absolutely.
Question about storms, when you're losing power, losing internet connection, is the recording going to be on like a backup recording so you have backups of what happened when the power was down? And
there'll be a generator on site, you know, because there's certain equipment that has to be kept running.
Right.
And one of the primary things that you're going to have is the camera system and alarm system. You know, same thing with the access control system. So all of those things, they're low power draws anyway. It's basically running a VHS tape player, you know, would be the power draw. So it's low power draw, low power, cameras are using much power. So everything will be kept up and running.
But will there be a log of, like a recorded, if power's down for 24 hours, would that be recorded back 24 hours in case something happened when you didn't have cell service or internet connection?
Yeah, so what happens is the equipment keeps running, you know, the entire time. So if the equipment's running, it continues to run. If the power is going to be down for a week, you're going to have to refuel the generator. Mm-hmm. You know, to keep it running so you maintain power supply. And that's a good question because it gives me an opportunity. I look back, and I know I talked about industry standard for 60 days for reporting. We're actually going to have it doubled. I looked at the specs, so it's going to be 120 days.
What's going to be 120 days?
Which will be the backup of the recording of all of our cameras.
And that's all my questions.
Thank you. Thank you. Have any questions? No. Okay, moving on to
the
studies
next.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So the next witness is Roger Marion. Come on up. Now, I had previously handed out his exhibits. That was A82 through A86 and A89. And then we have one new exhibit. This was marked as A102. I can hand out.
You know what? Just reading it to the rest.
Yeah, because I think we had enough.
I have some wondering about them.
Okay. So what's been identified as A82 is Ramesh Manwani subscription agreement dated December 22nd, 2021. A83 is We don't have our nice name chart.
I do, but I keep my notes intact. Okay, next.
A83 is Ramesh Manwani's accredited investor representation letter dated December 22nd, 2021.
Thumbs up.
A84, Sushlesha Gamani, probably botching that name. Subscription agreement.
Let's spell it.
Sure. S-U-S-H-I-L-A. Last name K-H-E-M-A-N-I. Subscription agreement dated December 22nd, 2021. A85, same person, but their accredited investors representation letter dated December 22nd, 2021. A86, resolution of the NAR Group, Inc., dated February 11, 2019. A89.
Hold up. Yep.
Affidavit of Ramesh Manwani, notarized December 11, 2023.
Hold up on this one. Okay.
And then A102.
This one you just handed out, correct?
Correct. Share subscription agreement for David Kushner dated December
18th, 2021. Didn't we have done
that with him? No, but Roger prepared it. Maybe it's a legal document. Let the lawyer talk about it.
When we get there, any board members want to ask Mr. Kushner about it, I'm going to recommend that to the board if they allow that to cut here.
That's it.
Can you raise your right hand? Do you swear the testimony that you're going to give in this matter will be the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth that you've got?
Can you just state your name for the record?
Roger A. Marion.
Tell me your last name.
M-A-R-I-O-N.
Okay. What is your profession?
I'm an attorney.
And what is your relationship with the NAR Group?
I'm both a director and the in-house counsel.
Are you a shareholder?
I am a small, very small shareholder. That's
And as NAR General Counsel, have you prepared legal documents for NAR? Okay. We just went through the documents, and at a previous hearing, we had discussed the stock purchase agreement where Ramesh Manwani transferred the property located at 62 Anthony Road to the NAR Group in exchange for shares. The stock purchase agreement references a subscription agreement. Did you prepare the subscription agreement?
What's the exhibit you're handing him?
A82. A82 is the non-group restricted share subscription agreement of National Money, and it was prepared December 22, 2021. Let's just go to the end. And it is the exhibit.
you recognize this on personal knowledge that you're the one who carried it?
Absolutely.
And what is the purpose of a subscription agreement?
A subscription agreement actually has two purposes. Number one, it's the agreement to buy and sell stock, the buyer or the seller. And the other thing is it tells the person that this is something called a restricted share of stock. You can't just deal it on stock and tell them what that means. So they have to agree to that.
Okay. And what was the consideration for the shares contemplated today?
Is that set forth in the document?
It is. I'm reading dead center in paragraph 2. The contemplated consideration was $1.9875 million. That's $1,987,500.
Okay, and to your knowledge, was that paid or was there a substitute consideration?
There was a substitute consideration.
And what was that?
Ramesh Kumbani owned the tract of land that we previously mentioned, and he offered that tract of land in return for his shares.
And that's the property identified as 62 Anthony Road?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And was there a separate agreement that transferred that interest?
Absolutely.
And I believe that was marked as A83? I believe A83, could you identify that for the record?
So, A83 is the accredited investor representation letter from our group.
And who prepared that?
I prepared these. My form. And this particular one was signed off by the National Army on 12/22/2021. Also, this has a signature on it,
Okay, in paragraph 1 of that subscription agreement, it references an accredited investor representation letter. What is that document?
When you're buying and selling shares in a corporation, it's actually a federally governed transaction under the Securities Act of 1933. And Reg D, Section 501 requires that you make sure that the person buying it is what you call an accredited investor. And to achieve accredited investorhood, you have to have one of three things. You either have to have a certain income, which for an individual is $200,000 or for a couple is $300,000, or you have to have a certain minimum net worth, which is $1 million, or you have to be an insider to the actual corporation. So this is their accredited, is their accredited investor letter, and by signing this, they are representing that they are accredited investors, and they're checking a box or boxes to show where and why they're accredited investors. And they're also agreeing that they will only dispose of shares to other accredited investors.
Okay, and are there similar documents for Sushila Kamani?
You can show me, but I believe so.
I'm showing you now, it's been identified as A84 and A85. Can you please review those?
Sure.
He also asked you a question, and you skipped. The question was, do you have anything in writing to show that Ramesh Manglani offered up or transferred the property in lieu of the $1,987,500, which A82 says was supposed to be a cash payment?
The answer is yes, there is a property transfer agreement, and he should have. What's been placed in my hands is A84, which is the restricted share subscription agreement of Sushila Kamani, and also the A85 is the accredited investor representation letter of Sushila Kamani. Just so that everyone understands, you need a subscription agreement if you're taking shares. You need an accredited investor letter if you're putting money in. That's why there's two separate agreements. Not everyone puts money in.
And did NAR prepare a resolution authorizing Nitin Manglani to act on his behalf with respect to the development application?
Yes.
If I show you a document that's been identified and marked as A86, are you familiar with that document?
So I'm holding A86. and it is documented dated February 11, 2019. It is my form. I prepared this document. And it is signed by Rocky Mbani, who at the time was the sole shareholder of Marco.
What's the difference between Rashad Mbani and Ramesh Mbani?
Ramesh is his father, Rashna is his brother. Rashna is the president of the corporation. Ramesh is the one who had the land and put the land in to get a part of the corporation.
And if you could, looking at that resolution, what did it authorize Mr. Mangwani to do?
Yeah, a lot of clauses, but let's get to the
Exhibit A86.
We're referring to A86, and I am reading from the last paragraph. Now, therefore, be it resolved, Nick Mangwani is hereby appointed as an authorized agent of the corporation. Upon such terms as may be after be negotiated, to take all lawful actions when necessary and all actions reasonable within his business judgment to establish lawful rights, licenses, registrations, and permits to cultivate hemp and cannabis and to establish cultivation locations and facilities by purchase, lease, and or construction and plan and commence cultivation at such locations and assist the chief executive officer to preserve the business of the corporation. Again, the chief executive officer being Russia.
Thank you. Can you read back that original? I'm going to ask what we use here. I thought, I'm obviously wrong, but I thought I heard that this was a resolution giving Nitin Mangwani the appointment as authorized agent for his father.
This is telling, if I may summarize, not the actual document, but this is telling Nitin Mangwani to get out there and do everything necessary to set up a cultivation location.
On behalf of NAR Group.
We have a different document.
Okay.
The next one.
That was 886.
The next document, can you just identify 889?
889 is the affidavit of Ramesh Mangwani with Exhibit A. It is
with Exhibit A, B, C,
A, B, right?
A, B, and C, right?
And C, that is correct. And this was notarized by me on 12/11/23. You can't see it on this one, but the original by the way, I don't know what it is.
I take the lead pencil and I go like that over the seal, so when you photocopy, you can see the seal.
That is not how I go.
But your testimony is of the original
seal? I know the right, so I think I see it. That's what I do.
If you notarize that as an attorney, you don't have to see it.
I'm an attorney in New Jersey and New York, so I'm used to dealing with all that suspenders. But again, that's his signature also, and I recognize his signature. Exhibit A, just for the record, was a health certificate. Okay, Exhibit B is a general durable power of attorney in favor of Nitin Mangwani. And Exhibit C is the stock purchase agreement. And this is actually the one that we were talking about because Article 1 is the purchase and sale of shares in consideration.
And you prepared that for us?
Yes, this is definitely my form. I recognize it. And again, it was signed by Ramesh, by Sushila Mani, by Sushila Kanani, and by Rashi Mamadi as CEO.
And that was executed when?
It is dated 22nd November 2021.
And that was not
until later. Sorry, that's December. 22nd December 2021.
And not until later date in the back date, right?
No, it's cut into the document.
Well, who notarized Exhibit B? Did you notarize it? See, someone that notarized it took a pencil over the seal so you can see the seal there.
on the last page of Exhibit B.
Okay, so, no, I wasn't a notary on this document.
Who was the notary?
I don't...
Aren't they supposed to put their name, their notary number, and all that sort of stuff on it?
If they're not an attorney, I don't know if it was an attorney who did this or not, but I can't read the notary.
No, it's not an attorney, because the attorney has to identify attorney at law of New Jersey. If it's not an attorney and notary public, they have to use their stamp, they have to put their name.
Well, there is a stamp, and the stamp might have their name on it, but I can't really make it out.
Okay, so, I mean, you don't know in fact if this thing was backdated or not, other than saying, well, the date's in there, November 2007, and it's your testimony, you don't think it's backdated, because it would have to be a very good job of backdating, or you see some sort of highlighting or something? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I doubt that they'd be able to backdate it and line it up to the original document.
Okay, but
I guess anything is possibly fixed, right? You should be fixed, but I don't think it's done that way.
That's your opinion?
Yes.
Okay.
Granted, on the record.
Yep.
And that was 889, again, right?
That's Exhibit B of 889, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And how about Exhibit C?
Yeah, just going back to 889.
Okay.
I just wanted to make sure that that was a document that authorized Mitten to act on the public behalf.
No. The affidavit does not.
You're talking about the exhibit.
Right. The exhibit B is the one that purports to allow him to do that. Exhibit 89 doesn't. Exhibit 89 is an affidavit of Ramesh attaching the exhibits. 89 was, in fact, notarized by our witness.
Right. I'm looking at the general durable power of attorney. In 2007, I know that it's old. Any attorney on the bar will recognize that those two darn spreads need to be read. No one uses that, but it does exist on this document.
Some people use it, not me.
I think it was a good one. But anyway, it is a standard form power of attorney. I'm being revised from Allstate Legal or whatever.
Yeah, except if you buy it from Allstate Legal, it would say Allstate Legal on it.
Yeah,
right?
One does.
This one doesn't, right?
Right.
And then the final document I'm going to hand to you, A102. It is identified as, and tell us what that is.
So I've been handing A102, that is the Marvin Descriptive Share Subscription Agreement. It's dated December 8th, 2021. It is for 40,000 shares to David Kushner, who you guys are referring to.
And though the agreement references an accredited best representation letter, I don't believe there is one in person, correct?
He wouldn't have done one because he didn't put money in. Like I said before, subscription agreements are everyone receiving stock, accredited investment letters are for people putting money. He didn't sort of sweat out every time he used that term.
So the questions I have for him.
Correct.
Mr. Webb? One of you have to turn, Don, okay. Turn up yours. Now yours will go on.
Was there a request to move those documents? Is that right?
No, not yet.
We just identified them.
Identified them.
I was trying to be sure.
Yeah.
I'm just curious.
I figured on these, it's best to have all the cross-examination done on them by you, by members of the public, by the board experts if they have any on these documents, by board members before we get into whether or not they go into evidence.
Understood. I just want to be sure. I didn't miss that.
You didn't miss anything.
Okay. Good evening, Mr. Marion. My name is Richard Webb. I'm an attorney representing the Objector State Lebanon Township Coalition. I'm going to ask you some questions. Do you have an office with a private practice of law?
I do. I have two of them, actually. One is right next door at St. Pat's in New York City, 488 Madison. The other one is in Hackensack, New Jersey, 190 North Street, Suite 204.
How long have you had those offices?
Going from memory, I think that I got and got the one at 488 Madison in 2011. I think I got the one at 190 Moore Street in 2014.
And what, how do you practice at that location under what name?
We have two law offices. The way it's set up is Marion and Allen with Brad Allen, and my partner. And Marion and Allen's partners include also his law firm, his separate law firm, and my separate law firm, the law offices of Arcade, Marion, D.C. But those are for tax purposes. The practice is all done with Marion and Allen.
Okay, I'm going to use the term NAR to mean the NAR Group Inc., so I'll say the NAR Group Inc. every single time.
You know, I
understand. Okay. Can you just in general describe the scope of your legal services for NAR?
Sure. When they need a legal document or when they have an SEC-style question, they come and ask me. But for the most part, it's a limited position because we hire specialists in different things. I'm not a specialist in marijuana cultivation or cannabis cultivation. He goes and asks someone else about that. So he uses me as his corporate counsel.
Okay. Has the scope of your services changed since its inception?
Not much. Not much. I mean, it probably comes to me a little bit more for advice now, but about the same.
Are you the attorney that advises Mar on all securities law matter?
On what?
Securities law matter.
Well, all securities questions he brings to me. I can't answer if he brings anything to anyone else because I don't know.
Good. Do you know that he does bring it to anyone else?
No, I do not. At least he brings it all, okay?
Did you advise Mar concerning their application to the Cannabis Regulatory Commission?
I don't think I had a hand in drafting that.
Well, aside from what you had a hand in drafting, if you provide advice to them concerning their application.
I do remember being asked a few questions. I don't even remember what the questions were if it was so long ago. And I probably would have given them my honest opinion.
I might refer to the Cannabis Regulatory Commission as the CRC. You understand that's what I mean?
I do.
Other than for you, who to your knowledge does NAR rely upon for legal advice in connection with this application to the CRC?
I don't know who their cannabis specialist was at the time.
So you identify yourself as the in-house counsel for NAR?
Yes.
You don't know who they use for legal counsel for the CRC?
I would have known the name then. That was years ago. At this time, I don't. I basically handle, you know, buying and selling the stock, that kind of thing. Okay, I'm not the guy who does anything to do with cannabis.
No, I'm just, very good. When did you first perform legal services for NAR?
This is an estimate. I'm going to think it's about 2019.
Well, the document you just referred to earlier was dated February of 2019. You said you drafted that document.
Yes, so 2019.
Was that the first time that you, was that the occasion for you to begin doing legal work for NAR?
That was probably the first time I did legal work for NAR.
Okay. How did that initial representation come about?
I had represented family members of Mr. Mubani before. And I was also someone who he saw on occasion because at the time my whatever car I was driving back then was not exactly perfect. So I needed a reliable and honest mechanic, and I found one.
So you had you when did you first meet Nitin Mantwani?
Again, this is an estimate. I'm going to estimate somewhere around 2017, 2018.
What were those circumstances?
That would have been with regard to either my car, or I don't remember if I met him or anything else in his car, or if it was a perfume company also.
When did you first?
I'm sorry, you say
perfume company.
When did you first meet Ramesh Mangwana?
I'm going to say probably about somewhere between 2015 and 2017.
Have you provided legal services for Ramesh Manglani or any businesses that he's connected with?
Absolutely.
When did you first meet Roshna Manglani?
Probably a few months before they were married.
Which was that when?
I don't recall. I just remember the first time I met her was when he was introducing her as a fiance.
Oh, approximately, do you have any idea?
I'm going to guess that would have been. It's only a guess, and I don't know, so I'm going to refrain from guessing.
Well, you said you met Nathan in 2017 or 2018, so it would have to be after that, right?
Yeah, it would have to be someone probably 2018, 2019.
Okay.
Yeah, that's just messing up.
When did you become in-house counsel for Norm?
Let me ask you, Lee, when I wrote the documents in 2019. The idea is very simple. By the way, I represent a lot of startup companies. I mean, startup companies can't afford to go out and hire lawyers. It just costs too much. So for a certain share of the corporation, or to be an insider, so to speak, I give them a small amount of legal service. I have a large number of companies that do that.
Okay. So are you employed by NAR now?
The word employed implies paid by. I am not currently paid by NAR.
So you're not paid at all by NAR?
No, I am an in-house counsel who relies on being a part of the enterprise, and I hope that someday the enterprise is one that is successful.
Is one that is
successful. That is always the bet when you're doing all of these startups, is that they'll eventually succeed, and then you'll be hired out of the daily grind of having 50 clients a day, and just you'll be settled down in a nice, comfortable office for your corporate.
So you don't receive a W-2 from NAR?
No.
You don't receive a 1099 form from NAR?
Correct.
What percentage of your practice time is devoted to NAR?
Excluding showing up at this crazy hearing, I would say less than 1%.
Less than 1%?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what was the answer?
Less than 1%.
Thank you.
From the crazy hearing.
Right.
Have you ever seen a municipal hearing as long as this one?
Oh, this is nothing.
Really?
Don't even get me going. This is a drop in the bucket. I've been doing this for 35 years. I represent 8 boards.
Wow.
You have no clue. No clue of land use in New Jersey.
Do you hold yourself out to be in-house counsel for your firm's other corporate clients?
Absolutely. If you were to search me as in-house counsel online, you would come up with Hello Looking, Gold Sherpa.
You don't have to list them. I just say if you do it. So you do that with other clients?
Okay.
Do you regard your testimony tonight as part of your duties as an arts in-house counsel?
No, I was actually asked if I would voluntarily appear, so I'm voluntarily appearing. I was not instructed or commanded to appear.
So as NAR's corporate counsel or in-house counsel, you're fully familiar with their corporate documents and corporate records?
No one can ever be fully familiar with any of those records, but I have a decent familiarity.
Well, is there anyone who's more familiar than you are?
Let me move on.
You sure?
Well, I would say him or his wife will present well.
Okay.
Probably not.
Well, let me ask you this. Is there any lawyer who's more familiar with NAR's corporate records?
Not one more.
Okay. Are you the keeper of NAR's corporate records?
Some of them. People who have built a corporation are familiar with that little black book.
So NAR's initial board of directors consisted of board of one, Roshna Manglani, correct?
Correct.
Did the board of directors change at any time since it was formed?
Yeah, yes it did.
Recall when it first changed?
I don't recall when it first changed.
So you organized the company in February 2019, and you've been their in-house corporate counsel since 2019, and you don't remember when the board of directors changed?
Of course not.
Okay.
Again, this is less than 1% of my practice, and my mind is usually on much more active cases.
Is Ramesh Anglani a member of North Board of Directors?
Yes, he would.
When did he become a member of the Board of Directors?
When he received stock. It's my recollection of the way the corporation is set up. When you get stock, you are treated as a director. You are voted on as a director.
Did you say in this corporation?
Yes.
You didn't say any corporation, you said this corporation.
I said in this corporation.
This corporation.
Or not. Okay. Which, by the way, is different than every other corporation I've ever been a part of. But it's his method to be egalitarian.
I'm sorry, what's that last part?
It's NAR's method of being as egalitarian as possible.
Who are the other members of NAR's board of directors?
I don't have a cap data. I'd be glad to ask.
Do you remember any of their names?
Off the top of my head, I'm drawing a blank right now, but you can just ask for a copy of the cap data. If you don't have to, right?
You said ask for a copy of the what if you don't have it already?
The cap table is the capitalization table. It's a table that is kept by all corporations that list their stockholders and their holdings. Kind of like a shareholder.
Can you show him Exhibit A80? Which is identified as a list of NAR investors / directors. That might refresh his recollection. Maybe it won't. Maybe it will.
Well, actually, I am seeing A80. And yes, A80 will be a list of the directors. Do you have A80?
I do.
Yeah. So you're saying that all those people on A80 are directors?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you recall who the members of NAR's Board of Directors were on October 29th, 2021?
I don't know if that's before these people invested. If it is, then you've been in Washington with Bill Lundstedt. But I haven't seen dates of their subscription agreements.
Are you saying that prior to the subscription agreements that have been discussed tonight, Roshna was the only member of the Board of Directors?
Yes, before anyone signed subscription agreement, she was the only correct.
Did anyone other than Roshna acquire stock in NAR prior to the subscription agreements in late 2021?
Your question was an example. You said late 2021, and you just read subscription agreements from other parts of 2021, right? As soon as you signed a subscription agreement, whenever that was, that's when you had stockholders. Before no one became a stockholder without subscription.
When was Ramesh's subscription agreement?
All right, let me find it. That one should be in front of me. Ready? That one was December 22, 2021. That's at the end of
2021. That's late 21, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, let's say October. Was there anyone prior to October that became a shareholder other than Roshna?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Did the board of directors of NAR adopt a plan to sell shares of stock in NAR in October of 2021?
No, there was no specifically drawn plan to sell shares.
So there was no plan by the corporation to sell shares. How did that happen then? How did it happen? How did it happen that certain people bought shares and other people didn't? There was no plan, it just happened randomly?
No, both of those would be incorrect. People, when they find out that you're doing a venture, come and ask, can I be a part of it? And of course, the natural question is, well, what do you have to add? What do you want to be a part of it? Are you going to be our lawyer? Are you going to be our security guard? Are you going to be our accountant? Are you going to go money in? What are you doing that makes you feel that we should let you be a part of it? So people will solicit pretty hard to be a part of a venture, especially if you're really hyped up the whole marijuana industry.
So there was no stock offering plan per se adopted by the board?
No, there was no stock offering plan, there was no advertisement, there was no board solicitation for investors, none of that. Actually, wait a while.
Did the board of directors ever adopt a resolution determining the terms on which it would offer stock to individual shareholders?
Be a shareholder, you've already got your stock.
Well, individual prospective shareholders.
Each individual who wanted to invest was individually in the city. That's what you're asking. There was no overall rule except everyone who doesn't fit. If your question is different, I wouldn't remember.
So who was making those decisions? Is that just Roshan's himself at that point?
Yeah.
So there was no plan as to how much any given prospective shareholder would have to contribute in order to get a share of stock?
I'm not inside her head to know if she had a number in mind, but I will tell you that more of the consideration was what they bring. Are they a buyer? Are they someone who can help the company? Remember, when you're starting a startup, the success of the company is paramount.
So looking at A82,
that would be the National Body of Restricted Shares of Government.
Okay. You have 882 there?
Yes, he does.
Okay, could you look at paragraph 9D as a boy? Okay, the second sentence says the recipient, in this case Ramesh Nambani, received and read the bylaws of the corporation and the October 29, 2021 action by unanimous written consent of board of directors without a meeting regarding the issuance of shares.
Right.
So when I asked you earlier if the board had taken any action to issue shares, you said they hadn't done anything.
No, actually what you asked me is, was there a plan?
What is this unanimous written consent? What's that all about?
So when you start a corporation, you have to designate what shares are which classes and which shares are going to be allocated to each disposition. So if you're going to allow that certain shares have been sold, for instance, we call it common shares, those common shares are going to be common stock shares, are going to be allocated specifically for that purpose. So it's not planned to sell them at this time, but it is making a provision so that you can distribute shares. That's as opposed, for example, preferred share, which would be a different class of share.
Okay, but that you wouldn't call that a plan. What you just
correct.
Described.
That's why I disagree with your statement.
Right, whether you call it a plan or you don't, this unanimous written consent of the board of directors without a meeting, is that something you could produce for this board?
That is something that you could produce.
Is it something that you have that you could produce?
I don't know if I've turned my copy over to council or if I still have it in my office. If it's still in my office, I could produce it. If it's not still in my office, I cannot produce it.
I would ask the board to direct the applicant to produce this document.
Yes.
I think it's a very important part of the
understanding. Did you hear what
you
said?
I didn't hear it.
Yes.
She said. My microphone was off. Yes.
Thank you.
I for my notes of my to-do list, which identify the document that
it was the document referred to as action by unanimous written consent of board of directors without.
Whoa. Action by unanimous written consent
of board of directors
without a meeting dated what?
And let's say the title of the document begins October 29th, 2021.
There we go.
Action by
Okay. That's what I was looking for. Thank you.
So you've already said, I think, but I just want to make sure I heard you correctly. Does the board approve any form of private offering memorandum or prospectus or other disclosure document in connection with the offering of shares?
There has been no private offering memorandum. When a person wants to come in, they're given.
Just to answer my question, did they prepare any document like a private offering memorandum, like a prospectus, like a disclosure document that is available or given to prospective shareholders?
No, not exactly what you asked.
Or what is there then? There is something else.
That's what I was going to tell you. They're given access to the books and records so that they can look at it and satisfy themselves in what we call due diligence, that this is something they want to do. And when they satisfy themselves with due diligence that they want to do it, then you can go forward with the subscription agreement. But no one's going to throw their money into something until they have a pretty good idea of what they're going to do.
Were prospective investors in NAR told what their money would be used for?
I don't believe that investments were earmarked for a specific purpose, but they were told what the purpose of NAR was.
But just what the purpose of NAR was, not anything more specific than that.
I don't know of anyone at all who specifically said, I'm only giving money to security analysts or something like that. There was no earmarking. You don't need any contribution to the fund?
No, I wasn't referring to earmarking a particular investor to a particular asset, but rather a more specific understanding of what NAR was going to use the funds for other than to develop a cannabis facility.
Well, if you're asking what they had in their minds, that is not something I'm paid for.
No, I'm asking what NAR was told them. Did they tell them anything more specific?
I was never present when they were told something more specific than that.
So were prospective investors given any actual or projected financial statements?
They were given the finances at that time. I don't know that it was a printed statement so much as computer access to the current finances of the end.
So were they financial statements?
No, financial statement implies that you print out a snapshot at a particular moment in time.
Right.
And a projected financial statement implies that you're going to have someone who is an expert in future income produce a document that says what the future income is going to be. Now, there are a lot of people playing with a lot of numbers, but I don't believe that a formal future projection was ever formed. And I don't believe that any current financial statement that I'm aware of was ever made to snapshot what the corporation was.
So, so they were not given any balance sheet or income statement?
No, that also would be incorrect. Like I said, if they're given electronic access, they see the balance sheet, they see the income, they see everything. It's just not a printed statement that they take home. They're given access. Not everything these days is printed. There's something called a data room. People will go in and they will actually look at the current state of the company. They get them a moment of access and they can make themselves satisfied. Or if they're dissatisfied, they can always walk away.
They couldn't take any home with them. We'll look at it home.
I imagine if someone asked to take something home, it wouldn't be denied, but I was not present when anyone asked for a breakdown.
Were prospective investors in NAR told how many shares of stock had been given to Rashman and Guani prior to that stock offering at the end of 2021?
Yes, they would be told how much she had, and they would have been told total number of pairs, which of course is in the incorporation, and they would be told the number of authorized shares, which is the number out of the total shares that you're currently authorizing for distribution.
For prospective investors in NAR told of the risk that NAR might not obtain zoning approval?
I'm sure they were. I remember them being told a plethora of possibilities for failure. Because one thing I'll always emphasize to investors is startup is 80 to 90% failure.
So where, when you say they were told, where were they told? What was there a piece of paper where they were told?
I remember at one point putting together a risk assessment. I don't have it anymore, but I did, before I was in House Counsel, I was asked to put together a risk assessment.
Okay, chief. I think a little bit earlier I asked you if there was any sort of a disclosure document or given out, and you said there was not. And now you're saying there was a risk assessment.
Risk assessment is a document you give the company so that they can inform people. You don't have to pass it out. Now, when I'm doing a public stock, you do
it. Don't tell me about that. You just said it's a public stock.
Well, that's the point, isn't it?
No, it's not the point.
You know, you've got to answer his question.
He doesn't always let him answer, that's the problem.
He's elaborating. Just answer the question.
Was the risk assessment given to BINAR, the prospective shareholder?
I do not know. I wasn't present when anyone was answered.
So was part of your legal advice to BINAR upon whether or not they should share that risk assessment with prospective investors?
Yes.
So did they follow your advice?
I was not present when they had any conversations with investors with the exception of a matter.
Do you know if NAR's political connections play any role in their obtaining a license from the CRC?
I didn't have any political connections.
I said, do you know if NAR's political connections play a role in NAR obtaining a license from the CRC?
I think your question has a false assumption in it.
Listen. You can't object. She can object to questions. You have to answer them. You either say yes, no, I don't know, I don't understand your question.
Then the answer is I don't understand your question because it doesn't make sense.
Try again to restate the question. It makes sense to me, but it didn't make sense to him.
I don't think he has any connection with my original answer.
If he does. If you take a look at what's been marked as 017,
yeah, I'm holding 017.
This is a transcript of statements made by Lincoln and Jelani at a township committee meeting on August 18, 2021, which you also attended.
So what page are you looking for?
I'd like to look at page 3.
First of all, how do we know he attended?
Oh, I'll ask him.
Yeah, ask him.
I know he attended for this.
Establish it for the record.
On page 3.
First of all, do you recall attending this meeting?
I don't know what this meeting is yet.
Okay,
this is
the meeting on August 18, 2021, that the minutes of the meeting reflects you attended, along with Mr. Bloomberg, to talk about whether or not Lebanon Township would pass a marijuana zoning ordinance. Recall attending that meeting?
I can remember attending a meeting like that.
Okay. Well, that's what this is a transcript of. Mr. Lyon's testimony, his remarks at that time.
Now you're referring to page 3.
No, I'm referring to page 3, and on page 3 at line 16, Mr. McLean says, and unfortunately, this is a politically enhanced license. It's all about who you know in this license. Remember?
That's the word says that.
You probably don't, do you remember saying that?
Not particularly, but
all right, somebody said that. Did you dispute that he said it?
No.
Okay. Do you have any idea who NAR knew that helped them to get their license?
No, I don't believe there's NAR knew anyone that I'm aware of.
What do you think he was talking about?
I think he was talking about the fact that when you come into a town and you get your license, sometimes some bigger companies have a lot of political sway.
You think he was talking about political influence in the town or political influence at the CRC?
No, I think you have to ask him.
You have no idea what he's talking about.
Well, from reading these three lines.
No, I'm not just reading these three lines. From your relationship as in-house counsel with NAR and knowing him for all the years that you do.
That's not your question.
Well, now it's my question now.
Listen.
That is my question.
It's his question now. You've got to stop arguing.
I don't understand his question. Is he asking about the three lines again? Is he making up
something? He said, he's not asking me about the three lines. He said, as in-house counsel, are you aware of that? That's what he said.
Aware of what?
You've got to listen to him.
I asked you what you thought he was speaking about, and you gave an explanation of that, about coming into a town. And I said, if he was talking about coming into a town or that.
So any of this discussion between would be privileged. I don't know where we're going with this.
Privilege on how? Legal advice? About whether or not he has got political connections?
A meeting at which he was present.
I was thinking that the one you would object to was, did he give advice that he should give the risk assessment?
Yeah.
I was expecting you to say, I object. Attorney-client privilege, but you didn't, and he answered that. This one, to me, I invite the board, this one, to me, is not a matter of privilege. And I would recommend that the board chair present the witness to answer the question.
Thank you. Let me rephrase this one. You hear what he said at that meeting, right? That this license, meaning the CRC license, it's all about who you know in this license. See, that's
that. Yes.
Okay. I'm asking you, in your capacity as in-house counsel, having organized the company, having known Nick McLean, having gone to his wedding, being yours to testify tonight, what do you think he was talking about when he said that?
I think that he was a little bit sour to some of the bigger companies that don't have to put up with all this. Their way is paved. They go right into places that they're politically against.
So you think he was saying he's not politically? Are you aware of NAR having any political connections in Lebanon County?
I don't know what you would call it a political connection. I know that they met with people.
First, begin to offer stock pursuant to the resolution that we discussed a few minutes ago.
I think they were first approached in 2021.
Well, that resolution was October of 2021. We're going to share sold before that. I think you testified earlier, but we're not.
No, there will be no share sold before the first, or even transpired before the first. Not what I'm aware of.
Okay, looking at. A80 again. This is the list of shareholders.
Okay, hold on. When you say this exhibit has been identified as a list of
investors,
I want to get the exact
description, because we had a back and forth on what to even call it based on Nitin Nirwani's testimony. So what it is identified as, a list of NAR...
I'm referring to AAD, I don't know what it's called.
No, but the list of NAR investors slash directors, just, this is, I'm not testifying, obviously. Based on my recollection, Nitin Nirwani testified that some of the people on the list were directors, some were just investors. This witness testified that everyone on that list was a director. So let's call it A80 because I'm not exactly sure what it is at this point.
Well, I have A80 in front.
Okay. It was 10 people as investors, if I'm not counting.
Is that a question? Is that correct?
Is that correct?
Yes.
Is that correct? So, it does not list Nitin Nirwani as an investor. Doesn't Nitin Nirwani own shares? I think he testified that he does.
Okay, hold, stop for a second.
Well, okay. Yes, he does. There he is. Third line down.
Okay.
He is
It says he's less than 10%, I agree, zero. Under his, next to his name, it doesn't say investor. It says COO slash general man for GM. It doesn't say investor.
I don't believe anyone would ever put a certain number of shares if it was zero. Less than 10% implies an ownership of shares.
So everybody on this list has shares.
I would guess so, but it's a guess.
It's just a guess.
Actually, I haven't seen subscription agreements from every single one of these people. And that doesn't mean that Rashna doesn't have a subscription agreement from these people. I don't recall seeing a subscription agreement from every single one of these
people. Okay, so this A80 lists on the left hand column, a little more than halfway down, it says employee class B share. Does that suggest that all of the, is that a class of people, or does that describe everyone below that?
Personally, I believe that that's a reservation of shares for a future distribution below a level to incentivize future employees, called employee pool.
And you're listed as a shareholder, right?
That is correct.
How many shares do you have?
I don't have the exact number. I know it more as a rough percentage, and I can say rough because you know the word called dilution. When benefits come in, you own a little bit less every time you benefit.
But you had a certain number of shares, didn't you?
I did, but I don't recall exactly what it was. I thought it was a percentage, and I was approximately a 1% shareholder.
Wait a minute. Can you give me Exhibit 102?
Exhibit 102?
Yeah. No, never mind. I withdraw the question. Never mind. Do you have a subscription agreement in your name?
I would, yes.
Okay, but we don't have it as an exhibit. Correct?
No, I didn't provide that.
Okay. Never mind. I withdraw the question.
Okay. So the only means by which you're compensated, all the legal work you've been putting off, and that you've done since 2019, you share. You don't know how many shares you got.
It's a 1% ownership share.
But as you said, 1% today might not be 1% tomorrow, right?
It's possible to be more, yes.
So it's not just possible, it's definitely it's going to be if there are more shares issued, right?
Yes, if there are more investors, you get to everything.
So when did you receive that 1% share increase?
When I signed on as the general counsel.
So, 2019? So you had a 1% interest in NAR. It was you and Rasha Nagwani were the only shareholder in 2019?
Yes, I would have been a shareholder when I came on that.
So it was just you and Rasha?
Yes.
Because earlier I asked if there were any other shareholders besides Rush and said no.
Yeah, I didn't think about it.
What about your share?
I didn't think about it.
Okay. What's the difference between Class A shares and Class B shares?
Class A plans that the Class B share is going to be an employee pool share. An employee pool share typically doesn't have the same voting rights typically they have proxy agreements.
Have any Class B share been issued?
No. Not to the best of my mind.
Has the Board of Directors of NAR approved the plan to issue Class B shares?
No.
Do you know if the NAR intends to adopt the plan? To issue Class B shares?
Perhaps in the distant future, but first they have to have this site up in mind.
Well, you say distant. Have any idea when they might? They're going to have employees, assuming they go forward with the project, they'll have employees there soon, right?
If they get approval to build out and then they get employees, yes, I imagine that meeting would happen rather quickly.
And then they would issue Class B share?
I presume so. I presume there would be some sort of employee adoption plan that would have to be, of course, submitted to me for the general and approved and all the usual steps you have to do for this up. All the steps you have to do for this up for an employee adoption plan.
Did everyone who invested in NAR receive and sign the same form of stock purchase agreement as Raj and Brian?
They should have, yes.
I'm sorry?
They should have, yes. And I just issued handwriting on it to Barry for the number of shares in the invitation.
You might not have heard me. I said stock purchase agreement.
Oh, as opposed to subscription agreement.
Correct.
No, I believe that that was a unique agreement. The Ramesh Lines agreement was a unique agreement.
So A76 was unique to Ramesh Lines?
A76.
Let's check.
Yes, A76 is the land transfer agreement.
So that was unique to Ramesh Meghwani, and she, again, excuse my pronunciation if I'm getting it wrong. Did she lift the money?
Yes.
Did all the people who invested in NAR receive and sign the same form of subscription agreement as Ramesh Meghwani?
Yes, they should.
Did all the people who invested in NAR receive and sign the same form of accredited investor representation letter as Ramesh?
Yes, they should.
The investors that are listed on A8, during what period of time did they sign the documents and invest in NAR, starting one and ending one?
You'd have to ask those here. Yeah. But ask those agreements. So I don't know who would go. I don't know. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear
you. I don't know. I don't have those dates.
You were involved in the action by the Board of NAR in October of 2021 to approve the sale of the share as a permit, right?
Correct. Right.
And that you were involved in preparing all the documents for Ramesh to sign, correct? So you would have been involved then, presumably, in preparing all the other documents for the other shareholders to sign in that same time period, right?
Depends what you mean by preparing. Remember, these are forms. I give a form of the agreement to Rashma. She knows how to fill it out when she is transferring the shares. Am I brought in on every transfer share? No.
Had any shareholders, had any prospective shareholders sign these documents prior to Ramesh signing these documents?
Yes, we just established the record.
You signed yourself?
I don't have the date, so I can't say for sure, but I gather.
This is December 2021, you don't remember?
I gather.
I'm sorry?
I doubt.
He doubts it. He said he doubts it.
You doubt that you remember it?
He doubts it happened, but do you remember or not? It's easier. Do you remember?
I don't remember.
But just tell us.
I don't remember. You won't accept it.
No, you haven't. You're saying all sorts of different things. If you don't remember, just say, I don't remember.
Yep.
Do you remember?
I don't remember.
There you go.
In total, how many shares of stock has NAR issued to date?
I don't have cap table, so I don't know.
Is there a ledger showing the number of shares issued to each shareholder?
That's what you mean by ledger. There should be an electronic cap table.
Okay. Is there either electronically retained form or on a piece of paper a recording of the shares that were issued, the number of shares that were issued to each shareholder?
I don't know because I commenced one and showed everyone how to use it. I have not maintained the cap table personally because I have not been involved in each shareholder coming over.
And if there is such a table, would it show the consideration paid by each shareholder?
No.
It wouldn't?
Probably not.
So on the form that you prepared and gave them, did that have
a
box for that?
The form would have a cap table in it.
I would ask the board to direct that the applicant produce that table.
What's the purpose? I mean, because I've kept my mouth shut up until now because I didn't know where you were going with this. But what's
we're
the
getting there. Don't worry.
No. What's the purpose? Before I give the board advice on whether or not they should ask
it's,
them to
it's central to the applicant's entire application that they establish the ownership of this land by NAR. And they're basing their entire case on the idea that the owner, the real owner of the land, Ramesh and Brian, gave the land to them for shares of stock in the company. The bona fides of that transaction can only be established if you have access to all of the documents that indicate what really happened when those shares were issued. You can't tell that just from looking at these two or three documents that they're putting in this record.
Let me ask you something. I understand what you're saying, but what does that have to do with an application for an interpretation? What does that have to do for an application for an interpretation, an application for a use variance, and an application for site plan approval where it does appear, unless you have some evidence to show otherwise, that the owner of the property at the time they submitted this application to the Board of Adjustments, I'm not talking about the planning board, it does appear on the face of the documents that when they submitted the interpretation application to the BOA, the use variance application to the BOA, the site plan application to the BOA, even though it was withdrawn and then reinstated, the original submission dates, it does appear that NAR owned the property at the time. So why, what's the relevance of who owned what, when shares in NAR?
The relevance is that in their application.
In their application to who?
To this Board of Adjustment. Ms. Jennings' application to this Board of Adjustment, she asked for the application of the rule commonly referred to as the time of application rule. And that rule only applies if their application to the planning board in 2022 is deemed to be their application.
Stop for a second. Stop. I understand that that's one of the things she asked for. Quite frankly, in my legal opinion, to me, it's irrelevant whether or not when the application to the planning board was deemed complete. Okay? That's irrelevant to the interpretation she's seeking at this board. That's going to end up being my legal advice to the board. She may disagree, but if she does disagree, then what you're asking for may be relevant. But that's why I had said, Ms. Jennings and I had a back and forth, because I said I felt that the board had jurisdiction over an interpretation asking a question of whether a use was permitted under a prior ordinance, because the board can just do that. Because they do it under Section 68 of the MLUL, and they can do it under Section 70B. She said, well, I go out about it on a different route. She's taken the position that you just stated. And I'm going to ask her again, are you sure you want to hold on to your position that the basis for asking the board for an interpretation is because the application was deemed complete by the planning board?
It's both.
If you're asking
if you're making the argument that when it was complete at the planning board, then I think what he's asking for is relevant, because what he is saying is that when the application was filed to the planning board, the applicant did not have, the owner now wasn't the owner then, or there was some type of, for lack of a better term,
well, it was lack of standing on their part.
No, you don't have to own the property to file an application, so what's wrong with that?
Listen, his argument is there was no standing.
The application was incomplete. We had owner's consent.
Listen, I understand, but that's his argument that the board might reject. But if you're sticking with that as...
I'm sticking with it. I'm not giving up.
Okay, then in my opinion...
I'm going to say this is completely baseless.
Right. And why is it baseless?
Because you don't need to own property to file an application.
Right. You need the
owner's consent, and we have the owner's consent.
Right. What's your argument about that they had owner's consent? Because
well, first of all, several arguments. One is, I don't agree that all you need is owner's consent, naked owner's consent. If the applicant has zero enforceable proprietary interest in the property and never will, that's number one. So just the fact that somebody walking by your property says, "Hey, can I file a?"
Did you address this issue?
No. Hold. Let's take one at a time. One, you are saying that a naked owner's consent does not give an applicant standing to submit an application. I disagree with that. I believe...
I just read the statute.
I got the statute out right here.
Okay, read it. You see what it says?
Tell me the definition of an applicant means a developer submitting an application for a developer.
Redevelopment.
It's a development. The definition of a developer means a legal or beneficial owner, including the holder of an option, or another person having an enforceable proprietary interest in such land. In my opinion...
Okay, but doesn't say, or somebody who has...
Oh, dude, hold up, man. I'm going to give you my opinion, then you can argue back at me.
But I have to get what you said.
Yeah, I said...
So after enforceable, can you please continue?
Yes, including developer means. Not going to repeat the first one, not going to repeat the second. Or... other person having an enforceable proprietary interest in such land. And the way I'm looking at things, in my opinion, is if an owner gives you consent to make an application, that is an enforceable proprietary interest in such land. Now, make your argument that it's not, and then we'll let Ms. Bennett make her argument.
I think that's just ridiculous, frankly. I mean, it reads out the words enforceable proprietary interest. You might as well say owner's consent. Those words mean something, enforceable proprietary interest.
We've got the green book. We're looking at the definition of developer on page 711.
The purpose of it is, remember, this is about standing, right? Mm-hmm. So the purpose of it is that these boards don't waste their time on theoretical applications. You could have somebody, this is what I was trying to say before. Somebody owns property and a stranger walks by on the road and says, "Hey, would you give me consent to go in and file a variance application to put a hotel on your property?" The guy says, "Yeah, go ahead, knock yourself out. I consent to that.
You can do that."
And he signs the...
No. And he says, "And I'm never going to sell you this property. I'll never build a hotel. It'll never be built in a million years. I just think you're an idiot, but, you know, go ahead." And the board's going to spend, who knows, 10 hearings like this for that guy? And the owner's sitting there saying, "What are you people, stupid? Why are you doing that?" That's why you have no standing. It's an listen to those words, enforceable proprietary interest. Those words have meaning.
Okay. Give me something. What does enforceable proprietary interest in such land mean?
We'll get a legal argument, and we will. We'll brief this issue. Okay?
Let's brief the issue then.
We already briefed. The judge ruled on it.
Mr. Drill, we don't need to brief it now.
Oh yes, you do. If you want me to give an opinion that the board should ask for that information, then you submit a brief explaining your position, because I am not prepared tonight to give the board an opinion that they should require it, because my preliminary opinion tonight
based on what I've been doing, maybe I'm wrong, but what I've been doing for 35 years is if someone signs a consent, if the owner signs a consent, that's it. Now, listen, would you listen to me? I could be wrong. When I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong. Okay? And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, and I'll tell you. But unless you give me something in writing about it so I can research it, I'm not going to tell the board, oh yeah, you should ask for that information. No. If you don't want to brief it, but you already briefed it, just don't brief it. Okay? It'll be between me and him. You don't even have to get involved if you don't want. If you want to, you can. So I'm going to ask you to direct the letter to me with a legal argument, first of all, about why, if an owner of property signs a consent for an applicant, that applicant does not have standing to submit the application. And secondly, as part of that, I want you to specifically brief what you believe is some case law that proprietary interest in land means. Let Ms. Jennings then reply to it if she wants. I'll then take a look. If I want to do some independent research, I will. Then I will advise the board about this issue, unless Ms. Jennings backs off, which I don't think she's going to, why the interpretation is properly here. And then we'll take it from there. But I do not feel comfortable rendering an opinion that, at least preliminarily,
would
be wrong.
If it's a matter of this particular document, I'll withdraw the request for that document. This is tied into the. You're also assuming that there's owner's consent. How do you know there's owner's consent? That hasn't been determined yet.
Wait a minute. You're saying for the application they filed at the BOA, you don't think there's owner's consent?
No. That's a planning board.
Listen. You can send a brief in on that if you want also. Do you want the board to ask for those documents or not? Because if you do, you're going to have to give me a legal memo. If you don't give me a legal memo, my advice to the board is do not request for documents. Now, if you want to make some other argument about standing, to me, the time of application rule does not apply here. Okay? I said that. Doesn't apply.
All right.
Because they have an application that may have been deemed complete in front of the planning board. What does that have to do with the interpretation here?
Let me be clear. The problem is, I respect that. I respect your opinion, and I agree with you for that reason too. Okay, that's a reason why it doesn't apply. But if you simply dismiss the ownership issue without the board making a determination about that, then that issue's gone. That it can never be argued anywhere else.
Trust me on this. When it comes time to decide this whole mess, that'll be one of the issues that the board's going to decide. I'm going to advise them they should rule on it. If you want input on it, give me a legal brief on that, because I've already told you my preliminary opinion on that is that the time of application law doesn't apply to this application submitted to the Board of Adjustment, because it would only apply if there's an application to the planning board. But you can submit whatever brief you want. I'm going to ask you again, are you asking me to advise the board to ask for those documents that you just asked for?
Well, the only document I think that was in question was the document that would list the amount,
the recording of how many shares each shareholder holds. That's what you wanted. That's what they objected to submitting. That's the one I'm asking why it's relevant. That's the one you explained why you thought it was relevant. That's the one that I thought it wasn't relevant on that. That's the one I said give me a legal memo on. Do you want the document or not?
I want the document, but the issue of the ownership of the property is one that I think needs to await all of the evidence coming into the record.
I agree.
Before there is a legal argument made about it. I don't want to brief it out of order. There's other things that are going to come into the record that need to be argued.
Okay. Listen, if you want the document, I'm going to ask you to brief the stuff now. If you don't want the document, you don't have to brief anything now. You brief it whenever you want.
Then I don't want the document.
Okay. The request has been withdrawn, so it's moved.
Thank you. Excuse me. We're going to take a 10-minute break, and we'll see you at 9:20. Thank you.
No more drinking for
dinner. Hope that was on.
It is.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Webb, if you want to continue.
Yes, thank you. So, pure knowledge, was Norm the owner of the property at 62 Anthony Road in April of 2022?
Absolutely.
You were the owner?
Yeah. You just haven't been the document.
Okay. You believe they were the owner in April of 2022? That's your answer. You don't have to explain it.
Please give me a moment to check, sir. Yes, they're the owner as of 22 December 21. Pursued by the right to NJSA 25:1-11. Which states when you have a written contract and give possession, that's what transfers ownership of the land. The deed is merely evidence of transfer of ownership under 46:25-6. It's not the actual transfer.
Hold up. You got to repeat both of those statutory citations. First statutory citation slowly was
46:15-6.
Which you say stands for what?
Which says that a transfer of land has to be, if it's by possession and a writing. We have a writing.
It's by possession.
And a writing.
And a writing.
Yes.
46:15-6 says transfer must be by
46:15-6 says a deed is evidence of a transfer. Okay. Let's say he does the transfer, is the vehicle the transfer, it's the primary evidence of the transfer. You file that typically to put other people on notice, but the vehicle the transfer by the statute exploded if you have a writing and you give possession.
And what was the other statute?
That's both the statutes that exist.
Okay, so you didn't talk about a statute 25:something? I just.
No. What you were hearing, the statute that I just cited.
It's 46:15-6.
That's the deed statute.
Right, I thought you also cited another statute.
25:1-11 is the statute that says all you need is a writing and a transfer of possession. That's our statute for the statute. When it comes to a land transfer.
Okay. So it's your testimony and your legal opinion that the property was transferred to NAR by virtue of the written agreement, and the fact that the deed wasn't recorded, that deed's just evidence of that transfer, but the transfer had occurred on the written agreement. Is that what you're saying?
So the written agreement and the deed is today. Yes, 100%.
And what was the date of that written agreement?
That was... Sorry, let me take a second to look. That was 22nd December 2021. And by the way, I'm referring to A89 Exhibit C.
Thank you for the clarification.
So, in previous testimony, written meant on it said words to the effect of we just didn't transfer the deed or we just didn't file the deed, meaning we didn't do that until April of 2023. But there was no deed at all in December of 2021, correct? It's not as though Ramesh had a deed, the deed was prepared, he signed it, he took it, he put it in his folder, or gave it to NAR to put in a drawer. There was no deed.
No, I didn't prepare a deed. It's not necessary.
I asked if it was necessary. I just said, was there a deed in 2021?
You elaborated quite a bit, so I did away.
Pardon me?
Next question.
Well, you just answer his question.
You just have to answer his question. You don't have to explain it.
Stop for a second. Stop. Court reporter told me on the break, he's having trouble, okay? Because everyone's talking over everyone. So if he asks a question, just listen to me. If he asks you a question, answer the question. Okay? Don't add extraneous stuff to it and don't ask him a question back. So your question, please repeat your question.
To your knowledge, was there a deed prepared by or for Ramesh McGuane in December of 2021?
That's a yes or a no?
The answer was no.
Okay. And you don't have to repeat your testimony of why that wasn't necessary, because you already testified to that within the record.
Did you prepare the deed from Ramesh McGuane to Dharma?
No.
Why did you do that?
You mean why didn't I do that?
Yes, why didn't you do that?
I wasn't asked.
Who is Angelo Vagnara, Esquire, you know?
That name is not ringed up.
The deed of Exhibit 08 indicates that it was prepared by Angelo Vagnara, Esquire. Are you acquainted with Angelo Vagnara?
No.
Did NAR consult with you in any respect as to the deed?
That's attorney client privilege.
Pardon me?
That is attorney client privilege.
That, he says that that would require him to reveal attorney. Would you listen to me? He's saying that that would require him to reveal attorney-client privilege information. It's one of the few bases of an objection, either at a deposition that or in a hearing like this, that goes beyond. Right, the board under the MLUL can exclude questions if they're irrelevant. They have to be relevant, material, and not unduly repetitious. But if it requires an attorney to reveal an attorney-client privilege communication, they don't have to answer. He's saying that that would require him to reveal attorney-client information. Attorney-client privilege information.
I did not ask him to tell us what he told them.
Okay, what was your question?
I asked him if NAR consulted with him concerning the deed that was given from NAR, from Ramesh to NAR.
That's a legitimate question, in my opinion, and he should be directed to answer it.
Please answer.
Did you, whether or not you consulted is not attorney-client privilege information. If you say, yeah, I consulted, and he says, what did you say, that's attorney-client privilege information.
I don't recall being consulted regarding
A deed.
A deed.
But you got to speak louder. Why don't you pull the microphone closer to yourself?
There you go.
Okay, looking at Exhibit 08, the deed from Ramesh McGuane to NAR, dated April 5th, 2023. See how that?
It is in front of me.
Yeah,
I'm familiarizing myself. Go ahead.
I want to make sure you were prepared. If you could look at page 6 of 7.
Up down to page 7.
Okay. You see where it says promises by grantor?
Top paragraph.
I do see where it says right here.
Could you read the first sentence after the heading promises by grantor? It
says, the grantor promises and warrants that grantor, by acts of grantor, has not encumbered the property.
Right. Now, the interest of Shushila Kamani in the property that was recognized by the stock purchase agreement in December 2021, is that not an encumbrance on the property?
No, it's not an encumbrance on the property.
It's not. All right, let's look at A76.
1976, the stock purchase agreement.
Enough. So A76.
Okay, well, hold on. Is there any difference between the stock? I'm going to ask Ms. Jennings this because you submitted these. Is there any difference between the stock purchase agreement that was entered into evidence as A76 and the stock purchase agreement attached as Exhibit C to A82, which has not been admitted into evidence yet? I'm sorry. A89. Is that the same stock purchase agreement?
Yes.
Okay, so let's use A76, but that's been admitted into evidence.
Okay. A76, in the first paragraph, defines Ramesh Manglani and Shushila Kamani collectively, that's the word in the document, as buyer. Then in paragraph 1.2, it says that buyer, that is Ramesh and Shushila, represent that they own 100% of the property and will deliver the property free of encumbrances in consideration for the stock. Okay, so we have a document here, 876, signed by Ramesh, Shushila, and Nala, which recognizes Shushila as having an interest in the property. Ramesh then gives a deed, 2.5 years later, to Nar, in which he says he has not encumbered the property, and he doesn't mention Shushila, or Shushila's interest, or anything else about Shushila. And you don't think that that document, that this stock purchase agreement, represents an encumbrance that he needed to reference in the deed?
You are wholly misunderstanding the word encumbrance. Please ask a property attorney. Encumbrance is when you take a loan and they put a document against your property, and you can't transfer that property to take a loan. There's no encumbrance by someone else having an ownership interest. Especially if they're transferring the property with you.
So we didn't need Shushila on the deed. We needed her on the stock purchase agreement, but we didn't need her on the deed.
The deed, correct, because the deed is not the transfer instrument. The stock purchase agreement is.
Well, the stock purchase agreement says that she's transferring interest in the property.
That's right.
But you don't need her on the deed to transfer interest in the property.
The deed does not transfer interest in the property.
What is it?
The deed evinces a transfer of interest in the property. We can do this. Ask me.
Listen. You answered a guy's question. Asked and answered is an objection. You've got to knock this off. You're a witness. You're not representing the applicant. You are a witness.
Okay, let's move on to A82.
I have A82 in front of me.
You said you prepared this document?
Yes.
And A76, the stock purchase agreement?
Yes.
You prepared that document?
Yes.
And A83, the accredited investor representation letter, signed by Ramesh Manglani, you prepared that document?
Yes.
Was Ramesh Manglani represented or advised by legal counsel when entering into these agreements?
I do not know if he had independent legal counsel.
Where and when were these three documents signed?
The three documents. Are the three documents, I presume, in 76, 82, and 83?
Correct.
76 was signed in front of me and would have been signed in my Hackensack office, I believe. 82 and 83, I was not present for the execution.
You don't know where they were signed?
Correct.
Right.
So let's look closer at A82. If you look at the paragraph number 2, the heading sale of share, could you read, please, the first sentence in that paragraph?
Subject to the terms and conditions set forth in this agreement, the company hereby issues to the recipient 795,000 shares in exchange for any consideration of the recipient complying with the payment for such shares, which is attached hereto and incorporated by reference herein, and cash in the aggregate amount of $1,987,500.
So the consideration given by Ramesh is, it says, in consideration of the recipient complying with payment for such shares, which is attached here to and incorporated by reference. What is attached here to and incorporated by reference?
That language is put there with the intent that a share certificate would be attached. It's generally not. People don't abide by that. But generally, it's there for the effect of a share certificate. Again, I wasn't present when this was transacted, so I don't know if it was
attached. So you're saying that you believe that the reference to attached here to and incorporated by reference herein is a reference to share certificates?
That's what it usually is headed and means. Here I see how you could also interpret as the payment being attached.
That's a pretty big difference, isn't it? There's one going this way, one going left, one going right, right? Share certificates would be going from the NAR to Ramesh, and payment would be going from Ramesh to NAR, right?
Yes, but it is clear that, it's clear that that's what this document is. It's the transfer of consideration, shares.
No, it's not really clear at all. That's why I'm asking you about it. It says the consideration is attached hereto and incorporated by reference herein. But what is that consideration?
Well, the initial consideration contemplated was $1,987,500.
So Ramesh wrote a check for $2 million? Did Ramesh write a check for $2 million? On $1,987,500?
No, great testimony.
No, I don't want to know about the testimony. I'm asking you now. He didn't write a check for that. Okay. It says the consideration is attached hereto and incorporated by reference herein. I want to know what the consideration was that Ramesh gave for his share.
He gave the property at 6,200.
It doesn't say that. Why doesn't it just say that? You drafted the document. Why doesn't it just say that?
You drafted the story, shall we?
Yeah, she's right about that. Just
the exchange. Why didn't you just say that?
Because that came up a little bit later that he offered the property. At this time, he was offering money.
Oh, at this time, he was offering the money.
Yeah.
So, good sense. Hold on. At this time, he was offering the money. So, now this document was signed on December 22nd, 2021. And the stock purchase agreement was also signed on December 22nd, 2021. So at this time, he was offering the money, but at this time he was offering the stock purchase agreement, which was?
Those are not mutually exclusive. I don't know when he had conversations with his son, but it changed very quickly to, I want to do
property. Did it change the time when he left your Hackensack office to some other location when he signed you the document?
I don't recall the exact order, but I do know that he knew what he was signing when he signed the property transfer agreement.
Well, I don't know how you could, are you
what
a winemaker? Are you a winemaker? How do you know what was in his mind when he signed that? You don't know what was in his mind when he signed that.
You don't have to when you're with him and explaining the document and showing him.
You don't know what's in his mind. You don't know what's in
his mind. Is it correct that you don't know what's in his mind?
No, no one knows what's in another human's mind.
Yeah.
All right. I don't want to belabor the point. This is really very important. This document, which is the key really to your argument that this property was transferred, is that Ramesh got shares of stock for land. And this document doesn't say anything about land. It says in consideration of recipient complying with payment for such shares, which is attached hereto and incorporated by reference herein, and cash in the aggregate amount of $1,097,500. So it clearly doesn't say it has to all be cash, but it references something else attached hereto and incorporated by reference herein. And how can this document be enforceable if we don't know what was attached hereto and incorporated herein, which is the whole purpose of the agreement?
Is that your question?
Yes.
The answer is you're not the man who enforces it. You're not a party to this agreement. You're totally irrelevant to this agreement. The only agreement that counts is the transfer of property here. This agreement is not one that you are standing to enforce or even to question.
Oh, I know. Sit down.
Hey, people in the audience, you guys stay out. Okay. Listen, enjoy the show. You're going to get your chance to ask questions too, but we're just trying to keep the calm up here.
I understand that you don't want to answer the question, but...
No, I do. I did.
No. You said it was none of my business. I don't really think that was the question I asked.
Well,
so you really have no explanation for that. But I'm giving you... Please, take the opportunity. Think about it. Give me the best explanation you have of what is attached here to and incorporated by reference herein. That was the consideration given by Ramesh Nandwani for the 795,000 shares of this company.
Okay. And just so you realize, now you're asking him to give an explanation. He's going to say whatever he wants to say now as his explanation.
No,
yep.
Very simple. I'm not the one who filled out A82. I don't know when it filled out. I don't know how much time passed in between the person who filled out that money and their decision to make it land. When it came to me to sign the land transfer agreement, that decision had been made.
Okay. I think we've gotten the clarity we need on that sentence. Was there an appraisal bond that was offered at the time of the share purchase?
I do not know.
A84, the restricted share subscription agreement signed by NAR and Shashila Kavani. The first sentence of paragraph 2 says, basically similar to the first sentence that you read from the other document.
It's identical, other than these blanks.
Right. That's why I'm not going to ask them to read it again.
Right.
It indicates, though, that in this case, again, that shares are in exchange for consideration attached to and incorporated by reference herein, and cash in the aggregate amount of $712,500. So what did Shashila Kamani contribute to NAR that totaled $712,500?
She signed the property transfer agreement.
Okay, did she have an interest in the property?
Wait, I might be confusing two people. Let me make sure it's the same person.
So she had an interest in the property?
Yes.
So she had an interest in the property, but It wasn't an encumbrance on property.
But there's two different things.
I'm sorry?
Yes, those are two different things.
Okay.
Can I ask a quick question while we're on this subject of this exhibit or not?
Can you ask a question?
Yeah. Can I interrupt you to ask a question? I'll wait if you don't want, if you're on a roll.
Oh.
You're on a roll, I'll wait.
Others will check whether I'm on a roll. I don't know, but.
Let me ask a quick.
Go ahead, ask your question.
I'm looking at exhibit A82. And I'm comparing it to exhibit A84.
Okay.
The language is identical, but the amounts filled in are different, obviously.
Yes, I create the form.
Listen, you're doing it to me.
No, I thought I was
waiting for you to answer.
You're doing it to me now.
Okay. Well, that's all
right. Correct?
Correct.
Okay. If you take a look at exhibit A82, and Ramesh is supposed to be issued 795,000 shares in exchange for $1,987,500. Is that correct?
I do see.
Can you divide that and tell me how much a share that comes out to?
I don't have a calculator.
Someone give him a calculator. Unless I'm doing it wrong.
Bryce has it right.
Mr. Drill, I just did that math.
It's $2.50?
$2.50.
Okay. Now take a look at Exhibit A84. Sushila Kamani is supposed to get 285,000 shares in exchange for a payment of $712,500, correct?
I do see that.
And these are both dated on December 22, 2021, correct?
And that's the date I'm looking at now.
If you divide that, I'm going to ask our engineer, what do you get?
Two and a half.
You get $2.50.
Yes, sir.
So
what?
So, well, so the share price is, was the share price for everybody, or just these two people, on December 22, 2021, $2.50 per share?
I haven't done the math for everyone, but apparently what's the vote for these people?
Okay, go ahead. This is a curiosity question.
But I think you testified earlier that the share price for every shareholder was like an individual decision, basically, right? Depending on the value they brought to the company, et cetera.
The number of shares and the value would be different for each person, yeah.
All right, so it's not necessarily $2.50 per person. For sure,
he's asking you whether, depending on what the people brought in, they got a different number of shares or they paid a different share price. That's what he's asking.
Can I explain why that's hard for me to answer or almost impossible for me to answer?
Well, you can say that you don't know.
But I do know. The problem is that the way the question is structured makes it very difficult. Because some people pay money, and I think a $2.50 share for everyone's putting money. It's different for people who put in sweat equity. You can't value the sweat equity exactly the same. I don't know if a grower is worth the same
amount. Well, I know one way we can do this.
No, you answered the question. That's exactly what I meant. Okay.
But let's take a look at Exhibit 102. This
is really
okay. All right. Okay.
Okay. So, she had no legal title to the property, correct?
I did not do a property search. I believe she did. But I don't actually have property search to show.
Wasn't Sushila Kamani given shares of stock in recognition of the fact that she had paid money on our behalf to help clean up the property?
I believe she did give money to help clean up the property. I can't see how much stock she was given for what reason. I did not consult the doctor.
So if she had no legal title, no interest in a legal title for the property, that was in fact the case, would all of the consideration then be based upon her contribution toward the cleanup of the property?
That's a legal conclusion I'm not ready to
reach. What was the answer?
That was a legal conclusion I'm not ready to reach, so I don't know.
Well, was there any other consideration? It's not a legal issue. Was there any other consideration that you're aware of other than either potentially legal interest in the property, which I don't think she had, or two, an alleged contribution towards cleaning up the property. Do you know some others?
Those are the only two contributions I'm aware of.
Okay, thank you. Okay, in both A82 and A84, the subscription agreement, the document says in paragraph 2, quote, the company hereby issued, see that? Paragraph 2, in the first line, says the company hereby issued the recipient.
I do see that.
Okay. Now look at A76, the stock purchase agreement. Look at section 1.1. In that section, in that paragraph, this agreement says buyer shall sell and transfer to seller their entire 100% ownership interest in the property. And in numbered paragraph 142, it says buyer will deliver the property free of encumbrance. So in these two documents, supposedly signed on the same day concerning the same transaction, one says hereby issues, indicating it's happening at the present time. And the other document says, shall sell and will deliver. Both indicate something to occur in the future. Was there a reason you drafted these documents using the present tense for one and the future tense for the other?
I do not agree that the tense was chosen to be the future tense for this agreement. It was meant to be a tense for a time of danger, I think, to over English interpretation.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Yeah, can you pull the microphone closer to you?
I think you're overinterpreting it. I did not look at it as an English teacher. I wrote it to be a transfer of property.
Okay, good.
He said it was inartfully drafted.
Perhaps.
Okay, well, maybe. You drafted both documents to describe the same transaction on the same day.
No, that's not true.
No? They didn't happen on the same day. They weren't effective on the same day.
You keep changing your question.
Okay, were they effective on the same day?
They both have the same effective date.
Okay. They both have the same effective date. One says the company hereby issues. So that's the language you normally would use.
Which exhibit number says hereby issues?
I'm sorry?
84
says 82 and 84 both say the company hereby issues. So the issuance of the stock by the company is immediate. Purportedly, immediate, company hereby issues. 76, the stock purchase agreement says, shall sell and will deliver. It doesn't say hereby sells and hereby delivers. It says shall sell and will deliver.
So you have no particular reason for
choosing the past tense, the present tense in one case, and the future tense in another case.
That's a yes or no. He wants to know, did you have a particular reason for
No.
Change?
No. Okay. If we look at A76 and A82 and A84, was there a reason you prepared these two documents? You've been told a different font, spacing, paragraph numbers, formatting, etc.
82 and 84?
No. Contrasting 82 and 84, which are the same with 76.
Just compare 76 to 82. Don't get
it. Yeah, forget 84.
Compare 76 to 82.
82 is compressed with a smaller font so I can fit it onto less pages. They're both Times New Roman.
Okay. Looking at A76 again. Does A76 provide for a closing date by which legal title to the property must be transferred?
That would presume a future transfer. The transfer is now. This is the transfer.
Did this document transfer legal title to the property?
Yes.
It did?
Yes. On this document, possession was given
to Nitin Mangani
and not tomorrow.
So the stock purchase agreement did not contain any reference to a date by which a deed had to be delivered?
It did not have that sentence, no.
Okay. All right, please look again at A82. The Ronis McGlynn subscription agreement. In numbered paragraph 2, can you please read the sentence starting in the middle of the fourth line, just after the number 1,097,500. The sentence begins with the words, the recipient.
The recipient shall execute and deliver to the company a signed copy of this agreement with full consideration above in order for this agreement to be valid.
Was all consideration owed by Ramesh Manglani to Nard delivered on December 22nd, 2021?
Yes, by signing the property.
Yes, by signing?
The property transfer.
The stock purchase agreement?
Yes, the stock, sorry, the stock purchase agreement.
By signing A70, by signing A76?
A76, thank you.
Can you complete a transfer of ownership of real estate pursuant to a contract in New Jersey without executing the filing of deed?
Yes. NJSA 25:1-11.
So
ask and answer in several times.
So the execution and delivery of the deed from Ramesh to NAR was not part of the consideration necessary for these agreements to be valid?
Correct.
So NAR's sale of shares to Ramesh would have been valid and complete if Ramesh never executed and delivered the deed to NAR.
Correct.
But if Ramesh continued to own the property indefinitely, or he sold it to someone else.
Wait, can you repeat that?
Yeah.
If Ramesh continued to be the owner indefinitely or sold the property to somebody else.
Is that a question?
That would still be true. You would have paid all consideration.
That is an illogical statement. You can't still own it after you transfer it. I suppose if you sell it to someone else, it could be a fraud, but you don't own it once you transfer it.
Okay. All right. I'm now going to ask. The board to mark and take quasi-judicial notice of NJSC 46:26A-2, documents that may be recorded.
First, give one to Ms. Jennings. Okay, so the next O exhibit, well, the next document marked for identification for O would be O20. This is O20 for IP only at this point. O21? You're missing an O20. Oh yes, I am missing an O. O21, ID only.
Never
not yet. Ms. Jennings, are you going to, you want to check this right now by going online? You question whether or not this is a proper reproduction of New Jersey statutes, NJSA.
I'm going to give it up.
Okay,
I don't know.
Okay. Right. You want to check?
Check
on your iPhone. Beauty of modern technology. Mm-hmm.
built-in break for the board stenographer.
Yeah.
No. 221 is an accurate reproduction of NJSA 46:26A-2. Now, go with your question. Yeah, and hand it out, right?
Was that in evidence?
If they take judicial notice, it's in evidence. Okay. This is not just marked for ID, this is in evidence.
Judicial notice. Is that your ruling?
It is. It is my ruling.
Code 21. Thank you, Mr. Sellers.
You're welcome. All right, Mr. Ryan, I'd ask you to just read a portion of the statute into the record. Oh, I'm sorry. I'll be fine.
Thank you.
Tell him what section you want him to read.
I'm giving him an opportunity to familiarize himself. I'm not going to ask you to read the whole thing. Okay, if you just read the first sentence, introductory sentence, and then subsections A. B is a boy, and P is a Peter.
Specifically, the sections you asked for said.
Well, the first.
You've got to start with that first sentence.
First sentence.
Documents affecting real property entitled to recording are A. Deeds or other conveyances, releases, or declarations of trust of any interest. B. Powers of attorney or conveyance or release of any interest. You must have skipped down to P, which says, P, any other document which affects title to any interest in real property in any way or.
Well, keep on reading. Or contains.
Or contains any document.
Any agreement.
Agreement in relation to real property or grants any right or interest in real property or grants any lien on real property.
Okay, thank you. Prior to recording the deed from Ramesh Nagani to NAR, dated 8th, 2023, which is identified as 08, did NAR record or file in any recording office any deed, power of attorney, or other document concerning NAR's interest or claim to ownership of the property at 62 Anthony Road?
I do not know.
Another statute?
That's another statute.
We're going to ask the witness this time to check if the statute says what it purports to say.
I will represent to the board that I downloaded both of these at the same time.
We're going to mark this for identification at this point as 022. Ms. Jennings, you want someone to confirm that this is an accurate reproduction?
Yes.
Okay, so let's ask the witness to confirm it. Look on your... I'm hoping that he can do it faster than Ms. Jennings. Thank you. after the mission is done.
It is an accurate copy.
Okay, so my advice to the board is to take judicial notice of 022. And it's on that basis, as the witness agrees, that it's an accurate reproduction of NJSA 46:26A-12.
So be it. So moved.
Okay, so let's look at this statute. The statute is entitled Effect of Recording. Would you please read subsection? Section C.
A deed or other conveyance of an interest in real property shall be of no effect against subsequent judgment creditors without notice and against subsequent bona fide purchasers and mortgagees for valuable consideration without notice and conveyance or mortgage is recorded unless that conveyance is evidenced by a document that is first recorded.
Okay, so please listen carefully to this question. Would you agree that by reason of this statute, 46:26A-12, the stock purchase agreement between NAR and Ramesh Nandwani dated December 22, 2021 was unenforceable to establish NAR's interest in the property against any third party described in this statute as of September 20th, 2022, which is the date the planning board dismissed North site plan application.
And the basis of subsection C.
Correct.
It was not as effective against a subsequent judgment creditor without notice, if that's what you're asking.
He's asking anyone. Any
subsequent bona fide person,
yep.
And mortgager for valuable consideration without notice,
yep.
And whose conveyance or mortgage is recorded, would not be effective to defend against their claims if they violate.
Okay, so that would mean that if someone had gotten a judgment against Ramesh Nandwani at any time between December 2021 and April of 2023, a judgment is adjourned for $10 million, that judgment would have taken precedence over any interest of NARS under the, any alleged interest of NARS under this stock purchase agreement, correct?
If they met the other conditions of this statute, meaning without notice, there was a bona fide claim, and they did not have notice of the transfer.
Well, since you didn't file, since NAR didn't file anything to your knowledge, and assuming NAR didn't file anything anywhere, but if they didn't file a stock purchase agreement or any memorandum of the agreement or any notice of the agreement, any judgment creditor, by definition, is without notice.
No, it's not.
Oh, how would they have notice? Oh, you mean someone, Nitin, for example, knew about it?
Right, and he's saying the judgment creditor could have notice.
Right, judgment creditor without notice.
So he's answered the question.
Okay. So it would not be enforceable against them.
Correct.
Okay. It wouldn't be enforceable if Ramesh had mortgaged the property. Somebody did a title search, and the title search didn't turn up any indication that NAR had an interest, because NAR hadn't filed anything. Then it would be unenforceable against that mortgagee too, right?
If that mortgagee met the standards...
I just described the situation.
You just described the situation that the person satisfying C.
Yeah, under that hypothetical, that would have occurred.
Which would be a very typical hypothetical, actually, right? When somebody gives a mortgage loan to somebody, you need to do a title search, right?
And when they do a title search and NAR's interest doesn't show up, it would be without notice, right?
No, I do not believe it's typical to be foreclosed upon. I would say very few people in the community have been foreclosed upon. I do not believe that.
I didn't say anything about foreclosure.
Hold, okay, hold up. Now it's happening again. I believe it's answered your question. You are asking different variations of the same question, and Ms. Jennings is like, she hasn't said the word unduly repetitious, but she objected, and I assume she's objecting on the basis of being unduly repetitious questions.
Yes.
Well, in part, counsel, it's somewhat for the benefit of the board, because we're speaking of these things in very legalistic terms, and I want to make sure people understand what this really means.
Let me ask, any board members have a misunderstanding of what he's asking here? I don't understand.
I fully understand.
I understand. Yes.
Well, I understand.
Thanks. Thank you very much. As corporate counsel for NAR, would you say that NAR's primary objective in selling stock to Ramesh Nuglani was to achieve certainty that NAR had secured legal ownership and title to the real estate that was critical to the company's business? Was that their primary objective?
At what point in time?
When they did it, December of 2021.
At the time that they transferred the property, that would have been a key consideration.
What would have been a bigger consideration? What objective would have been a more important objective than that?
Would there be any other objective more important than that?
To obtaining the property?
Yes.
No, to obtain the property would be for the purpose of...
Not just to obtain the property, that was the purpose, but to achieve certainty that they had obtained legal ownership of the property.
I don't think they would have thought of it in those terms. I think that you believe you bought something when you believe you bought it. And you're saying, but was it certainty?
Wasn't that important?
There are people's okay.
It wasn't that important to them whether they really had legal ownership.
She didn't get it because he was still talking, she was still taking down his when he started up again.
So it wasn't that important to NAR that they achieved legal ownership of the property?
Well, he said he didn't say that either.
Was it important to them that they achieved legal ownership? There was certain legal ownership of the property.
It was important to them that they own the property, and I believe that they believed that they did.
You're leaving out the word certainty. It wasn't
important.
Stop again. Stop. Stop. You're getting frustrated, I understand, because he's not answering the precise question you asked him. But let him finish his question, take a deep breath, and then ask him again. You understand why he's getting frustrated? Because he's asking you, was it important that they have certainty of ownership, not simply ownership of the property? He is putting the word certainty of ownership. Now, if you don't understand what that means, say it, but don't try to go around it by being non-responsive to his question and answering the question you wish he asked.
I thought I answered that when I said I don't think the word certainty was in their mind. I think they believed that they owned it, and there was no extra layer of something called certainty.
So, are you saying that they would just assume certainty?
Yeah.
Because that was, on the basis of the legal advice they received, they had
certainty that they had
legal ownership of the property in December of 2021.
They did have legal ownership of the property.
Why didn't you prepare the stock purchase agreement to clearly require Ramesh to deliver a deed on December 22nd or shortly thereafter?
This was not supposed to be a property purchase agreement. This is a stock transfer agreement. I'm not a real estate attorney. I write stock agreements. You're asking why I didn't have terms from a standard real estate attorney agreement. That's not my thing.
So it was irrelevant to you whether the deed ever came in, whether they ever got it.
The word irrelevant is wrong.
Unimportant. Was it unimportant to you?
Yes, I believe the property had already been transferred, and it had been, according to New Jersey law.
Was there a benefit to NAR of not requiring Ramesh to give a deed in December of 2021?
Not that I'm aware of.
Was there a benefit to Wild Mesh of not having to give the deed in December of 2021?
Not that I know of.
NAR's never issued stock certificates to Wild Mesh McGlynn, correct?
I don't believe any actual certificates have been issued.
Don't the corporate bylaws of NAR require certificates of stock shares to be issued to each shareholder?
No, I believe it's upon request.
They don't?
I believe it says upon request, and I don't believe anyone has requested it. I'm not certain I don't have them in front of me.
Now, I am at a loss because I have only the bylaws that I believe are available from the application to the CRC. Do you know if the bylaws were amended since that time?
I don't believe the bylaws have been amended.
Is there
an exhibit number you want me to look at?
I'm sorry?
Is there an exhibit number you want me to
look at? It's not an exhibit yet. Your report.
This is page 8. Do you have the full document?
I got it.
Yeah. Listen, you don't have to, how do...
I don't want to ask him about anything other than one paragraph.
I understand. You can ask him if he's... Give it to him. Let's see if he's from, if he recalls seeing this or not, because if he doesn't, and it's page 8, we're going to be stuck. Hopefully, he'll recall this. Yeah.
Sorry, I don't remember this off.
Okay, so...
What did you say?
He didn't
I don't remember this all happened.
So you're going to have
you don't remember
this particular page with that particular document.
Do you recall? You don't remember. You don't recall that page being part of the bylaws.
Right. I remember there were bylaws that were made. I don't remember the words of each paragraph or section, and I don't know if these are part of the bylaws.
Do you have the whole document?
Well, I don't have it.
Okay, so you have to ask me another question.
Let's be clear on what the problem is, because I want to ask them. I'm representing to you that I got this from their application, right? So if I'm not moving into evidence,
Okay, but the problem is, you're going to ask them hypothetically,
right,
if this was attached to the application, what would that mean? Right? Or something along those lines. I know, but if you had the whole document, you could say, isn't this the bylaws? Look what it says on the title. He'd have to say, yeah, those were the bylaws that were submitted.
And so, well, no, he'd probably say he doesn't remember. And we'd be in the same place we are right now. That's exactly what would happen.
Holt, say this, because the board's going to knock off at 11. Let's see how many more questions you have. Maybe if you're done with other questions, members of the public can start, and you can come back with the document. But let's not. I know what's going to cost us a lot of time, and that's if we go with one page. You might be right that it will also cost us time if you have the whole document, but maybe not. So go to something else.
To your knowledge, assuming NAR obtains zoning approval, does NAR have sufficient cash on hand to pay for all the building improvements, site work, equipment, professional fees, or working capital that will be required to have the proposed facility up and running, or will additional capital be required?
First of all, without answering the question yet, because she's objecting on relevance, would you know that answer?
No, I do not know the current thing.
The easiest way to do this is he doesn't know. Next question.
Does NAR have any plans to raise additional capital, to your knowledge?
Does NAR have what?
Does NAR have any plans to raise additional capital, to your knowledge?
None that I am aware of.
What
Let me read to you some prior testimony given by Nick Mangalani on November 29th.
What exhibit number is this?
It's not an exhibit number. It's from the transcript from these hearings.
Oh, it's transcript from these
hearings. These hearings.
In front of the Board of Adjustment.
Correct.
Okay, what date?
The date is November 29th, 2023.
And what page are you going to be, what page are you referring to?
Several pages.
Okay.
Does everyone on the board have this?
No, I have this, she has that, I will share it with them.
Well, I have extra copies of these particular pages, unless there's an objection to that.
Well, there's no objection if you just...
Well, I just would like the board to have the words in front of
I understand. Just tell me the pages so I can see them. You're going to hand me the thing, I'm going to look at the same thing, I'm going to say, yeah, hand it out.
Okay.
What page is?
Well, the pages are 74.
74.
149.
149.
150.
150.
You can't compare them unless I give it to you.
Okay, so can you give me only, and Ms. Jennings only, those three pages? Looks like it is, in fact, from that transcript, 149. Looks like it is, in fact, from that transcript, and 150. Also looks like it's from that transcript. Okay, can you can hand these out to anybody. These do not have to be marked. These are pages 74. 149 and 150 from the transcript of this board's hearing session conducted on November 29, 2023.
Transcript page 74, I draw your attention to lines 18 through 23, where Nick Mangalani says the following. We didn't issue any one stock certificates. Everyone invested in the company. Everyone has shares allocated to them in the company. We haven't issued anything because until the building gets built, there's a evaluation that needs to be put together. So that's where this... There's, like, percentage numbers hasn't been put out. On page 149 of the transcript, beginning on line 22, again, Nick Mangalani says, in answer to a question as to whether there were transfers, he says, no, I said there was no stock certificates distributed, like we mentioned earlier. And just like this deed wasn't transferred over either. And all this stuff was supposed to happen at the end when everything gets done. And since SLTC was making a big fuss about it, we ended up just changing it over. In that testimony, it appears that NAR intended that after all approvals were obtained and the build out of 862 Anthony was completed, there would be a valuation done. And then Ramesh Mangalani would give his deed to NAR. Percentage ownership interest would be determined and stock certificates would be issued.
I disagree with the interpretation.
Okay. What's your interpretation?
You just read from three different pages. Each item has its own separate interpretation. So what exactly are you asking?
Well, yes, if you can parse it that way, I'm asking you, what do you think Nick Mangalani meant in speaking about these issues?
The way I interpret this, listen.
You can answer however you're going to answer.
The way I interpret this was very simple. It was that the certificates would be issued at a later time. If there's more meaning to it than that, I don't know.
Okay. Well, let's see. He says, until the building gets built, there's an evaluation that needs to be put together. What does he mean by that? Don't consult with counsel now, please.
I'm not consulting.
You are.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
Just listen. I've said this to other witnesses. Ms. Jennings is not allowed to talk to a witness during her testimony, and the witness is not allowed to talk to her during the testimony, just like if you are in a deposition or in court. Okay?
I was just
she can object.
I was just suggesting an objection.
No, but no. You're a witness. You can't do that. Just because you're an attorney, you can't do that. That's totally inappropriate when you're under oath and you're testifying in a quasi-judicial proceeding. Totally inappropriate.
Okay. I agree. That's a question.
Okay, let's see. He said, so when we get filled, there's a foundation that needs to be put together. Don't consult the court's counsel now.
So, finish your question. Okay.
Finish the question.
Let's just start that question. Start again.
Okay.
You said that you think all this means is that they just haven't gotten around to giving out sheriff's certificates.
Is that correct?
That is not precisely what I said.
Okay. Can we read back what he said before about sheriff's certificates?
I don't know which part of the line is correct. There's a lot of...
What he's looking for is his first answer when he gave his interpretation of what it meant that we didn't issue any stock certificates yet. Everyone invested in the company. Everyone has shares allocated to them. We haven't issued anything. And then he asked him something, and he gave his interpretation. He's looking for his interpretation of that language.
But was it before him suggesting a rejection?
Yes.
Not the part where you're saying it was the should, shouldn't do.
Yeah, before that.
The way I interpret this was very simple. It was that the certificates would be issued at a later time. If there's more meaning to it than that, I don't know.
That's what we're looking for.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. You get an award for that. So your interpretation was all the words that I read that didn't meant Ronnie said on this occasion were just about the sheriff's certificates that they'll be issued at a later time.
You asked for an initial of what I was what I thought yes, I used the German word A.
Well,
just tell her the word, gestalt, so look it up later.
He was asking for a gestalt, a summary of what I felt about the passages as a whole, and that was what I read, but I didn't draw it as a whole was.
Okay. So, what do you make of the words, until the building gets built, there's a evaluation that needs to be put together. So that's where there's, like, percentage numbers hasn't been put out yet. What does it do with shirt? She's talking about evaluation and...
Make it a question. So what's your interpretation of that, correct?
Yeah, yes. What do you make of all that?
That actually has everything to do with share certificates. If there's a possibility, even a possibility of dilution, then everyone's share certificates would change by the time you've done building. It's best to issue it once, right?
Oh, so there's a possibility of dilution?
Okay.
That would only happen
Stop.
Okay.
What'd you just do?
Yeah, I added a comment.
That's right.
Okay. See.
So why would there be a need for evaluation before sheriff's certificates could be issued?
The same reason I just said. Dilution.
It wouldn't affect the number of shares that people had, and the certificates evidencing those shares, would it?
It could.
It would affect the number of shares. So if someone bought 1,000 shares in December of 2021, the evaluation of the building in 2024 is going to change that 1,000 shares?
If you bought 1,000 shares at $250 a share, and you said, you know what, I'm going to invest another $100,000 into this grow room, and that's going to earn me another bunch of shares at $250 a share, it would absolutely change the number of shares you own.
You
would change your certificate too.
It would change your share because you get more certificates. But there's nothing stopping you from giving the certificates out now or in 2021, right? That's nothing to do with the valuation of the building in 2024.
Those are two different questions. Nothing is stopping him from issuing certificates whenever he wants.
So Ramesh Meghwani's percentage interest in the building is going to change after this valuation, correct?
After this valuation.
It's done.
It's not, right?
If he is diluted, then yes. If I have to.
I just want to give you a heads up, it's 5 minutes to go.
Okay, let's look at the unanimous written consent that you said you prepared, I think, A86.
Yes, at that time. As a matter of fact, You asked me about that, and you asked me whether I had shares at Denmark. I don't, I'm thinking about it. I don't actually think I received any shares until after the company got its license cultivated. So that would be like 21. So I'll take 19 I had shares.
So did you get paid to do this work?
It was on promise of being a part of the company. So that's been doing my work. I have not gotten paid.
This statement was made that this person has the opportunity to obtain the right to cultivate cannabis and to utilize land of Lebanon Township to cultivate cannabis in an ideal setting in February of 2019, which was 6 months before the famous meeting that occurred on August 8th, 2019, between Nitin and Y and Mayor Schmidt and other people, right?
That's the end of
the question. It's a question. Right? At the end of it, you made a question.
I didn't do the math, but I believe it would be about 6 months.
My suggestion is going to be, since it's now 11 p.m. on the button, and we're not finished with the questions, that we continue this at the next hearing session, which has already been announced to be on January 17th. Continue with the cross-examination of this witness and by Mr. Webb. And Mr. Webb, bring that whole document at that time. So again, the hearing in this matter is continued to January 17, 7 p.m., same room, same location, no need for further notice.
Thank you, Duncan. Motion to adjourn, please.
I make a motion to adjourn.
And a second? Second. Yeah. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
None.
Thank you.